ここに我々は子供たちを守る、日本を守ることを誓う。
The Japanese are normally not inclined to protest, but thousands of them are now marching together in protest of the deadly experimental shots and the WHO pandemic treaty. They are being ignored by their government and media, and they deserve our recognition and support. They are launching a class action lawsuit for the families who lost loved ones to the deadly shots and for those whose lives have been destroyed. And the plaintiffs are being heard as they share their painful stories. Medical professor of Osaka City University School, Misayasu Inoue, has recently delivered a warning to the world that Japan has contracted with the WHO to develop a new vaccine for disease X, which is expected to be deployed worldwide later this year.
A plan was set up to shorten the time to develop vaccines, which usually takes longer than 10 years, to less than 1 year. Operation Warp Speed. This operation was used to cover up the misconception of the genetic vaccines under the pretext of saving time. And an extremely dangerous medicine was selected. I believe that the fraudulent use of experimental gene therapy to healthy people, particularly to healthy children, is an extreme violation of human rights. The Japanese government is the first in the world to approve a new type of vaccine called self-replication replicon vaccine, and plans to start to supply it this fall and winter. The Ministry of Economy, Trade and Industry is providing a huge amount of subsidies for this project, and the factories to produce new vaccines are being built one after another in Japan. Furthermore, the Japanese government is currently soliciting large-scale clinical trials worth $900 million from pharmaceutical companies that are taking on the challenge of developing vaccines to prepare for the next pandemic by disease X, proposed during the Davos conference this year. If Japan were to become a vaccine perpetrator, it would leave irreparable harm to future generations. Therefore, the actions of the Japanese government must be stopped by international collaborations. It is difficult to stop this movement because it is now politically hopeless to change the situation of the Japanese government. The message I would like to convey to the world is that when disease X occurs in the future, you should never trust the Japanese-made vaccine.
A final draft of the pandemic treaty is expected to be presented for adoption at the 77th World Health Assembly in May 2024, which will undoubtedly be setting the world up for another planned assault under the guise of world health. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
I raise a point of order that impeachment Article 2 does not allege conduct that rises to the level of a high crime or misdemeanor as required under Article 2, Section 4 of the United States Constitution, and is therefore unconstitutional.
Congress has proven one thing over the years, the fact that it is a creeping theater of tyranny.
This institution is no longer the world's greatest deliberative body. It's kabuki theater. What was established today was a new precedent, something that had never taken place in this chamber in the history of our republic. What the Senate Democrats decided to do with a simple majority was to bulldoze 200 years of precedent that said something very simple, that this chamber would honor our constitutional obligation and conduct a trial.
Following the impeachment shutdown on the Senate floor, our hijacked Congress went into overdrive.
Some say, well, we have to deal with our border first. The Ukrainian-Russian border is our border.
$300 million for Ukraine border security and zero for an invaded United States border. While our national debt hits $35 trillion, billions upon billions of dollars the United States doesn't have was sent to be washed under the guise of foreign interests, looting the treasury of a dying currency that may have lost its last chance to begin patching up the gaping holes of U.S. national security. Would the real Ukraine please stand up so Americans can see what they're paying for?
There's just no question about that. I mean, you have fierce fighting in a number of locations around the country. You mentioned Chernobyl. Russian forces quickly overtaking that area. We understand they are still in control. The other thing that went down today that was of huge importance was...
Despite the rockets, Ukraine's nightlife is rocking. The bars and clubs are full. The place is jumping, music pumping, drinks flow freely, and they dance like there's no tomorrow. And it's not just here. Fun fact, there are now more bars and restaurants in the capital than before the start of the invasion.
And I have something that you're really going to like.
Yeah.
This is the official tally of the vote.
Yes, I see.
For the supplemental aid.
Yes.
And look at that vote. 73%.
Yes. Thank you so much. 73%.
That's a good vote.
Good, good, very good.
These names that voted no are all that remain of those that recognize the limitations of our constitutional republic.
A bipartisan majority has been working for months to get this aid across the finish line, and after so long, we finally are at the threshold. Any further delays will waste time we do not have, that our allies do not have. That's exactly what this motion is. We need to get this bill passed ASAP.
Mr. President, we just heard the astounding claim that it would be, quote, a waste of time to allow individual senators to come here and do what they were elected to do, which is to offer improvements to pending legislation. We're not a rubber stamp for the House. We're not a rubber stamp for either party's leadership in either chamber. We're United States senators, and we should be able to vote as such. If you support a fair and open amendment process, if you want to improve the bill, you should support my motion to table. This will not create the post-apocalyptic hellscape that those in leadership would have us believe will ensue. There will not be dogs and cats living together in the streets, nothing out of the book of Revelations. We will just find ourselves in a position of being able to do our job.
The House amendment to the Senate amendment to H.R. 815 is agreed to.
Thank you, Mr. President.
I'm making sure the shipments start right away. In the next few hours, literally the few hours, we're going to begin sending in equipment to Ukraine for air defense munitions, for artillery, for rocket systems, and armored vehicles. You know, this package is literally an investment, not only in Ukraine's security, but in Europe's security.
America, we must build a device to hold these scumbags accountable. If Congress wants to game the system, then the American people will use that game against them. There are millions of us. Ask yourself, how easy would it be to unleash lawfare on the sitting ducks in the country club in Washington, D.C. every time they vote on legislation that corrodes our founding principles and endangers our national security? John Bound, reporting for InfoWars.
Welcome to the Alex Jones Show, folks. I am Chase Geiser, your host today. We have an incredible show lined up for you. Some amazing guests coming into the studio as well. Obviously, yesterday was a major day all across the United States as protests broke out all over the country at various college campuses. Our very own Owen Schroyer was on the ground at UT here in Austin, Texas the other day, capturing some of these historic moments. And I'm seeing reports now that over 50 protesters were arrested here in Austin, Texas. And I'm seeing some disturbing things. I'm not somebody who is very sympathetic to Palestine, frankly. I'm not sympathetic to Israel either. I don't think there is a good side in this particular conflict. But what do I know? That being said, there was a really disturbing tweet from Greg Abbott yesterday. I don't know if the crew can pull it up or not, but he tweeted out that all of these protesters should be in jail. Now, like I said, I'm not a fan of Hamas by any means. I think Hamas itself is a terrorist organization, regardless of whether or not the Palestinian people themselves are terrorists or terrorist sympathizers. I think it's very clear that Hamas has terrorist tendencies. But if you want to go and protest in support of Palestine or in support of Hamas, then aren't you supposed to have the right to do that here in the United States of America? This is Greg Abbott. Arrests being made right now and will continue until the crowd disperses. So he's saying arrests are going to continue until the crowd disperses. So these arrests obviously don't have anything to do with actually breaking any laws. They're about dispersing the crowd. He says these protesters belong in jail. Anti-Semitism will not be tolerated in Texas, period. Students joining in hate-filled anti-Semitic protests at any public college or university in Texas should be expelled. So if you have anti-Semitic thoughts or ideas, that's too bad. It's unfortunate. I don't agree that there's a fundamental problem with Jewish people because they're Jewish. I don't believe that the immutable characteristic of being born into a race or ethnicity or religion means that there's something inherently inferior about you. But you should be expelled from a college or a university here in Texas just because you harbor those beliefs. And I saw Speaker Mike Johnson this morning tweet. I responded to it and retweeted my response to it. So maybe the crew can find that one as well. Some disturbing remarks from Speaker Johnson. I mean, he's coming out and saying that support for Hamas has no place in the United States and things like that. I'm thinking, you literally just funded both sides of this conflict on Saturday. Not to mention the $61 billion that you gave to Nazis in Ukraine on Hitler's birthday, which was Saturday. And you funded both sides of this conflict without allocating any funds whatsoever for protecting our own border here in the United States of America. And you're complaining that this type of conflict or this type of sentiment exists in the United States. Maybe you should have reconsidered whether or not to spend all your money funding both sides of all of these conflicts and allocated those funds or fought for those funds to be sent to the border. And I know that most of these protesters on these campuses are actual students, they're actual citizens of the United States of America, or they're here legally. I explicitly asked Owen Schroyer yesterday when he was on the ground at UT whether or not he felt that any of the protesters there were illegal migrants or anything like that, because obviously it's a reasonable question given that over 10 million people have come into the country illegally under the Biden regime. We know that over 72,000 of them have come from, quote, places of interest, which means terrorist-backed or run countries. So it's not unreasonable to think that maybe at some of these protests we would see illegal migrants, but no, it's students here. And we know that the universities have become these massive academies of indoctrination where no one's really getting educated. They're getting indoctrinated. And we know that Soros backs these NGOs and these nonprofits and these political action committees that support this. We know that for some reason, the same tents and supplies are popping up all over the country at seemingly disconnected campuses when these protests break out. So they seem to be organized and pushed from a central organization or central authority. It seems very top-down plan. It's like watching MSNBC or CNN. Obviously, the person talking to you is having somebody in their ear just directing it top-down. I mean, there's the famous clip from years ago of dozens upon dozens of major media outlets reading the exact same script at various local news broadcasts all over the country, the United States of America. And that it just shows the conglomeration of media. And we have a conglomeration of sentiment now, a conglomeration of indoctrination as well. And these protests are from a central source. Now, we're going to get into some of the other details about how these seemingly disconnected details of what's happening in the world today all line up. But I do first want to go to the clip that I mentioned to the crew of Owen Schroyer yelling at the protest yesterday. Let's go ahead and run that clip, please.
But we have bridges collapsing. Americans are poor. Americans are broke. We have our own problems to take care of. I think everyone agrees with that. But to say I've not met a person out here that disagrees with that.
But to say it's a distraction is disingenuous, because this is part of that. Like, we want America to divest from Israel, to put money back.
Okay. Here's why it's a distraction. Why is it the message here to stop the government funding of foreign countries and to stop the funding of foreign wars? Why is it that the message?
Because the amount of people that I died in the hands of Israelis is so much more disproportionate to the amount of people that
I agree.
So that's why it's an emphasis on Palestine specifically, rather than saying, let's stop Ukraine.
But here's the thing. Our government funds both sides of the war.
Okay.
It's not a war.
So that's what I'm saying.
It's not a war.
Well, it is a war.
To call it a war is misleading. It's not a war.
But come on. Do you know how long
that... There's no military. Palestine has no military.
40% of people in Gaza are under the age of 14. What army?
Okay, so that's fine. So I get it. You're concerned about the Palestinian people. That's fine. I get that. I understand that. Okay. I'm saying that you have your own issues here. And you can pick any humanitarian issue. What about the Uyghurs in China that get tortured? What about the Yemenis that get bombed and starved all the time by Saudi Arabia? No, you're not.
Yes,
nobody brings them up.
Just because there's multiple things that are wrong happening at the same time, it doesn't take away from the importance of just emphasizing one of them. Just because we're saying what's happening in Palestine is wrong, that doesn't mean we don't care about the Uyghur Muslims. That doesn't care either.
I agree. But nobody is out here marching for them. Nobody comes out
because
here.
Because the amount of...
Okay. We just gave $90 billion to Israel.
Okay.
Annually, we give them hundreds of billions. It all needs to be stopped.
There's a point
to be made. We need to stop funding Israel, stop funding war, stop funding everything. That's what I'm saying. We're all victims of our government. We all pay taxes for wars. That's what we need to be united.
What should we be doing right now? What should we be doing?
You're fine to come out here and protest. I'm just saying the larger unifying issue for the American people should be to, like, who here likes paying taxes? Why don't we come together and stop paying taxes? Then they can't fund Israel. Then they can't fund Ukraine's war. They can't fund any of these wars. Maybe we can keep a dollar in our pocket so that we can go out to dinner without getting broke.
How about this?
I'm fine with that too.
We have to keep it here.
You want everybody to stop paying taxes.
You like taxes?
I'm asking you because it gives
me everybody who's in that I'm getting my education
taxes anyway. That's what you have to remember.
What a misnomer. This university costs $40,000 to $50,000 a year. How much does UT cost?
$16,000 a year in state.
Okay, how much out of state?
$25,000.
So your public education costs tens of thousands of dollars.
Okay.
That's not free. Taxpayer dollars aren't helping that.
If your parents' income level is below a certain level, you get it for free. That's a given fact.
Nothing is free.
Okay.
Pell grants, have you ever seen a Pell grant? It's like tiny. It's like $500.
No, it's not. It covers my tuition.
Now you're older.
I can barely show you. I don't pay it either. Okay, here's the thing. I don't disagree with you, and there's a point to be made about how every single time there's a new thing to worry about. It was Ukraine. It was this. I do agree that there's a point of that, but at the same time, that's how human nature functions. And
response to stimuli. And I would just say this. I think all of us here, I think the Palestinian people, the Israeli people, the Ukrainian people, the Russian people, the American people are sick of war. I don't think any of us want war anymore. We're all being scammed by our government. We're all being lied to by our media. So that's all I'm saying. That's my big issue. That's where I wish we could all come together.
I think juxtaposing that.
Hey, I love you guys. I've got to go. I love you guys. I've got to run. I've got to run. Follow me.
So there we have Alan Schroyer doing what he does best. He's amazing behind the desk and amazing on the ground as well. And all of this comes in the context of this major funding bill that happened on Saturday. And we ran this video yesterday, this clip, but I want to run it again to really emphasize what is going on here. Owen made some outstanding points when he was a guest on the Alex Jones show yesterday. He sat with me, we watched Netanyahu calling for free speech and protest to stop on college campuses across America. This is clip number 7 that we're going to run in a moment here. Why is it that we allow a leader of any foreign nation to push, call, or lobby not just for the United States to take a position or for some specific foreign policy issue that would potentially help out their own country? Why is it that we see a leader of a foreign nation advocating for the explicit violation of the rights of our citizens by our own government? Now, I know that here on InfoWars, we talk about different countries and different leaders, and we criticize. Trudeau is somebody who comes to mind. The famous son of Castro is someone that we tease and taunt and criticize time and time again. Now, we aren't teasing, taunting, and criticizing Justin Trudeau because we're trying to lobby Justin Trudeau to violate the rights of Canadians. We're actually arguing on behalf of the inalienable human rights of all people given by God at birth, bestowed upon us. And when we criticize Justin Trudeau for coming out in his effeminate voice and saying, "Let me be clear, in Canada, you will no longer be able to purchase or sell a handgun." And he's constantly coming out and griping about the MAGA movement influencing his own country and Alex Jones. He mentions Alex Jones so much. The New World Order mentions Alex Jones more than right-wing media. You hear Alex Jones's name more from the lips of Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama or Justin Trudeau now than you do from any of the hosts that sit on Fox behind the desk. And it's because we fight for the freedoms of all people worldwide. Now, they're globalists who seek to subjugate humanity. We are the antithesis of globalists. We are individualists who seek to liberate humanity. We are Team Humanity. But when we hear from Netanyahu coming out and saying that we need to stop free speech and censor and break up protests on our campuses, it seems a little bit out of his jurisdiction, doesn't it? I mean, obviously it was out of our jurisdiction to give $61 billion to Ukraine, or out of our jurisdiction to fund both sides of the war between Israel and the Palestinians, out of our jurisdiction to invest so many resources in the Indo-Pacific because we're concerned about competing trade routes with China. So don't get me wrong. I understand that we overstep and we're out of our jurisdiction all the time. Of course, we here at InfoWars criticize our government for this. But it's out of his jurisdiction to go on for 2 minutes, not only about how he's entitled to our aid and our support, but how we as Americans, for some reason, aren't entitled to freedom of speech or protest. And I don't even agree with these protesters. We saw yesterday, Owen was on from the ground for 45 minutes on the War Room yesterday with me. And you could tell that these kids were nice kids, most of them. But it was very obvious that they were unaware students. They're passionate. They're just learning. They're just figuring out who they are. They don't really know what they're talking about, but they want to make a difference, and they're idealistic. I mean, these are stereotypes that have been associated with college students since the Vietnam War, since Kent State, frankly. And it doesn't make them right, but it does mean that they have a right to protest and be wrong. And though I don't like seeing attire that reminds me of Hamas or terrorism, and I don't like seeing the influence of Islam on our politics in the United States and the fact that Native Americans, traditional Americans, aren't having children at a fast enough rate, and we seem to be being replaced through migration and birth rates of other cultures that are streaming into our country. Though I don't like these things, I would fight tooth and nail for these people to have the right to protest. I mean, wasn't the ADL at one point in time, maybe I'm mistaken about this, but wasn't the ADL at one point in time famous for fighting for and protecting the rights of Nazis in the United States of America to protest and parade if they wanted to. I mean, we wouldn't need the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America if it didn't apply to hate speech or speech that we disliked or disapproved or disagreed with. I mean, the whole reason you have to protect freedom of speech at all is because there is going to be speech that a majority even of people would like silenced. It's inevitable in any culture, civilization, or society that at some point in time, some group or some individual is going to say something loud and clear that everyone hears that is going to be offensive to the majority of people. That's why you have the right explicitly stating that it shall not be infringed, that freedom of speech is protected in this country. So the whole point of it is to protect people like this that I disagree with, so that people like me who are a little bit more ambitious with their ideals don't try to subjugate or silence those people out of a sense of self-righteousness and therefore violate the rights of these protesters. Let's run clip 7 here.
What's happening on America's college campuses is horrific. Anti-Semitic mobs have taken over leading universities. They call for the annihilation of Israel. They attack Jewish students. They attack Jewish faculty. This is reminiscent of what happened in German universities in the 1930s. It's unconscionable. It has to be stopped. It has to be condemned and condemned unequivocally. But that's not what happened. The response of several university presidents was shameful. Now, fortunately, state, local, federal officials, many of them have responded differently, but there has to be more. More has to be done. It has to be done not only because they attack Israel, that's bad enough. Not only because they want to kill Jews wherever they are, that's bad enough. It's also, when you listen to them, it's also because they say not only death to Israel, death to the Jews, but death to America. And this tells us that there's an anti-Semitic surge here that has terrible consequences. We see this exponential rise of anti-Semitism throughout America and throughout Western societies as Israel tries to defend itself against genocidal terrorists. Genocidal terrorists who hide behind civilians. Yet it is Israel that is falsely accused of genocide. Israel that is falsely accused of starvation and all sundry war crimes. It's all one big libel. But that's not new. We've seen in history that anti-Semitic attacks were always preceded by vilification and slander. Lies that were cast against the Jewish people that are unbelievable, yet people believed them. And what is important now is for all of us who are interested and are, cherish our values and our civilization, to stand up together and to say enough is enough. We have to stop anti-Semitism because anti-Semitism is the canary in the coal mine. It always precedes larger conflagrations that engulf the entire world. So I ask all of you, Jews and non-Jews alike, we're concerned with our common future and our common values. We do one thing.
Top of the hour, and then the next hour, Harrison Smith is going to be joining me in the studio. Now, I am somebody who has a really hard time falling asleep. Last night, I was unable to fall asleep until after 5 a.m., so I got about 3 hours of sleep. And I really only need four. I absolutely need four. I prefer 10. But I can function on four, and when I'm having a hard time falling asleep, I can't turn my mind off. I'm sure you have a similar experience, many of you listeners out there. And I try to think of podcasts that I want to watch. I watch all three shows on InfoWars every single day, so I don't want to watch those again or listen to those. And I don't always feel like listening to whoever the guest is on Joe Rogan. And so I struggle, and I always remember that many of the broadcasts from the Alex Jones show from years and years ago are available at archive.org and prisonplanet.tv. And so last night at 5 in the morning, I was listening through Alex Jones' show 10 years ago. So on this day, 10 years ago, April 25th, 2014, Ukraine was in the news as well. And I want to show just a little bit of this clip here and unpack it and go into how some of the headlines seem so similar today. Let's see.
Jones Broadcasting Network. Network.
Big Brother. Mainstream media.
government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
April Fools, ladies and gentlemen, and the joke is on all of us. Obamacare, ladies and gentlemen, your time has come and gone to register, to sign up so the IRS can grab your bank account, levy your wages, and put penalties and interest on you. We've had multiple members of our crew try to go sign up for Obamacare as a test. We're going to have Joe in here later, one of the engineers, and it was impossible, and he's very internet savvy, as they say. It is a complete and total fraud. But lest it be one-sided, I will open the phones up today for supporters of Obamacare to call in on the broadcast and give us their take on everything. Also, scooting over here to get my guest folder. I always forget to move over
here. So this is the beginning of April 2014. And the reason I wanted to tie in this video, because we're going to show a clip from April 25th of 2014, is because this is right when the Civil War broke out in Ukraine. So I didn't know this until I was watching some of these clips from this month 10 years ago on the Alex Jones Show. But apparently, just a few months before this civil war broke out in Ukraine, Ukraine had voted not to join the European Union. So 3.5 months later, after politely refusing to join the European Union, we have a civil war break out in Ukraine between these Eastern ethnic Russian regions. And this is the beginning of the CIA's massive, heavy involvement in escalating this conflict between Ukraine, Russia, and NATO. These three entities. Really, it's just NATO and Russia, if you think about it. And one of the things that's so fascinating about the business that we're in, about the business that Alex is really specifically in, of just repeatedly getting things right, predicting the future accurately, is it's fairly easy to predict what is going to happen. The difficult thing is predicting when it is going to happen. So Peter Schiff is an example of someone who has been talking about the imminent collapse of the U.S. dollar and the importance of purchasing gold for years, if not decades. And he's right. The dollar is going to collapse, and doing things like buying or investing in precious metals from Kirk Elliott are a great way to defend against that. But what's difficult is saying when it's going to happen. That was what was so amazing about Michael Burry in The Big Short, was that he was actually able to make investments that made millions upon millions of dollars, not only for himself and his firm, but for the investors who invested in his hedge fund at the time, because he knew when it was going to happen based on the data. That was the genius of Michael Burry. Christian Bale famously portrayed him in the Big Short. And when looking back at these broadcasts from April of 2014 on the Alex Jones Show, I'm seeing this civil war break out. And I'm seeing these headlines, which we're going to get into in a minute when we show the clip from the 25th, that are so reflective. They mirror what we're seeing today, that you really see the pattern and the evidence of a concocted, concerted effort to escalate as much as possible with Russia for an extended period of time. Now, I'm someone who's only really been paying attention to politics for the last several years. Basically, January 6, 2021 is when I made the decision to start really paying attention. And so, as a layman, someone who didn't really pay attention, it seemed to me on the surface that this antagonism toward Russia was something that really only came about during the Trump campaign and after the Trump campaign in 2016. Obviously, the Russia collusion hoax was a narrative that came to the fore. But the fact of the matter is, this antagonism with Russia started years before, and it was just convenient for the globalists and the New World Order and the leftists in our own government and the world. It was convenient for them to marry the Trump problem to its Russia problem and treat them as the same issue. So now we've arrived at a place or a point in our country where half of the people, the leftists, the Democrats in this country, whenever you mention the name Putin, they think Trump. And whenever you mention the name Trump, they think Putin. They married the brands of the two leaders, the strongmen, the dictators, the despots. They're corrupt. They're billionaires. They're wealthy because they're exploiting the people. It's really this undertones of Marxism. But what's going on here is the effort to conglomerate all power worldwide and a deep hatred for national sovereignty, especially among nations that are considered superpowers. So there's hatred for Russia. There's hatred for the United States as long as it is sovereign. And efforts are underway to erode that sovereignty. And not only is Russia's sovereignty a problem for the globalists, but it's an issue for the national security apparatus, which in some sick way actually thinks that it's helping us. Because they are terrified of what happens after Putin is gone. At least with Vladimir Putin, we know that he's not rash. We know that he's restrained. We know that he's rational, and he's not insane. But who's to say that the next leader of Russia isn't a madman, isn't insane, and then suddenly capable of using one of the largest, if not the largest, nuclear arsenals in the world? So everything that can be done is being done now to eradicate Russia's national sovereignty. So in the event that whoever comes to power after Putin, whether it's in 5, 10, 15, or 20 years, in the event that that person is a madman, the globalists want to have total control over all of the politics, the economy, and the nuclear functions, abilities of Russia. So if a Joffrey Lannister gets into power, they can just tighten the grip. Unfortunately, by trying to tighten this grip, the United States and the globalists have created enemy after enemy after enemy, whether it's China, whether it's Iran, whether it's Iraq, Afghanistan, or Russia. We create our own enemies when we try to whip them into shape. And so instead of actually solving this problem, we are exacerbating it. We're going to dive in on the other side with this April 25th, 2014 clip. Stick with us, folks. We have an incredible guest coming up at the top of the hour. And Harrison Smith is going to be joining us in studio again today as well. Now, we showed a clip yesterday of Mike McCormick. He's the former White House stenographer who traveled the world with Vice President Joe Biden from 2011 to 2017. And he's recently published The Case to Impeach and Imprison Joe Biden, now advancing quickly up Amazon's bestseller rankings. We're going to get more into it. And at the top of the hour, we're going to show the clip that we aired yesterday of him on The Benny Show, revealing some groundbreaking revelations. And then we'll be speaking to him for 30 to 60 minutes or so at the top of the hour. But while we get this clip ready from April 25th of 2014, let's dive in a little bit to some of what we're seeing in the headlines today. So we've got U.S. nuclear weapons in Poland apparently would be a priority military target, Moscow. Russia would consider foreign deployments of nuclear weapons in Poland a primary military target, Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Rybakov has warned. Warsaw is in talks with Washington on potentially hosting nuclear arms as part of a NATO program. President Duda reiterated Poland's willingness to host weapons in an interview this week. So, despite what you think you may have known, apparently the Cold War is not over. I mean, I thought that Ronald Reagan won the Cold War and that all of these conflicts and these concerns about all-out nuclear exchange, nuclear war, were satiated or relieved at the end of his leadership, the end of his presidency. Somehow, Joe Biden has discovered how to restart the Cold War. And we see Ukraine to step up long-range strikes on Russia, according to UK military chief. Ukraine will step up its long-range strikes inside Russia, the chief of Britain's defense staff has predicted. Admiral Tony Radakin also suggested that incoming Western aid will help Kiev gain the upper hand despite the difficult situation. Now, there are reports that regardless of this aid, Ukraine has 6 months at best. Top analysts, leading experts are saying Ukraine has 6 months at best because no matter how many weapons or how much ammunition or training you send them, they simply don't have enough troops anymore. There's not enough boots on the ground. So unless NATO gets physically involved in this war with soldiers, there's not enough money in the world. And just like money doesn't really win elections, it doesn't win wars either. It's an important variable. It's an important component. But if money won elections, then wouldn't Bloomberg be the president of the United States? Didn't Bloomberg run worth an astronomical sum of money? And if money won wars, then how did we lose the war in Afghanistan or Vietnam or Iraq? Right? So we have this situation where we're throwing money into this pit. The war's going to be over in 6 months, according to the analysts, the experts. And who's going to wind up with all the weapons and ammunition and technology? Oh, Russia. So we're actually giving all these resources directly to Russia? Why? And the other thing is we've got this report that divide and conquer is the government's propaganda of fear and fake news. This is the purpose. They fund both sides of the wars, the conflicts, whether it's Israel and Palestine or Ukraine and Russia, so they can choose the winner. They fund both sides of these conflicts. Soros funds the pro-Palestinian protesters, even though he's a Jewish man. And they are the ones, the political class is responsible for all of the ills, not just in the United States of America, but frankly, at this point in the world. Now, I want to hop in just a little bit to this clip from April 25th, 2014. 10 years ago on this day, Alex Jones said the following.
The Russia situation just went from orange to red. It is now, in my mind, at a critical juncture. I want to get Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst, on very soon to talk about this. I want to get Colonel Schaefer on to give us his take on it. But quite frankly, I've been studying it very deeply, and we've been predicting where this would go. And unfortunately, it's going that direction because the globalists want it to go in that direction, and it's a very serious situation, to say the least. We're going to be breaking that down today. Ukrainian helicopter hit by grenade taking off. Ukraine helicopter has been crippled in a grenade attack in Kiev, warns Moscow is engineering a third world war. That's the London Telegraph headline. Did you hear that? Third world war. That is the Ukraine foreign minister that's saying that, by the way, and also their vice, El Presidente. Ukraine foreign minister ready to fight Russia is the headline from the Associated Press. Kerry warns Russia of expensive new sanctions. Putin warns of consequences as Ukraine steps up offensive. Russia wants to start World War III, Ukrainian prime minister. That's in CNBC. I mean, I'm reading mainline headlines here. Remember I told you a month ago this could turn into World War III? Oh, Alex, don't be a fearmonger. What, do the ICBMs have to come into orbit, back into orbit, or back into the atmosphere and then come in and detonate over cities and airburst for us to be concerned? How traitors can prepare for a worsening Ukraine crisis, CNBC. Russia now downgraded by S&P, proposes scorched earth retaliation against NATO countries economically. Pentagon, Russian spy ship tug operating near U.S. More Big Bear nuke bombers caught trying to go into British and European airspace. I mean, this is bad. And it's what you expect when the globalists want to bring in a new global crisis so that we're all distracted by their activities. And it is thoroughly disgusting that this is happening. The West went in 3 months ago when Ukraine voted to not join with the EU and to be sucked dry by that spider, and instead tried to stay somewhat neutral I don't want Ukraine sucked dry by the Russian spider or the globalist spider. But the globalist spider is about, let's be not exaggerate, about 10 times bigger, fatter, older, more evil, and more anti-human. I mean, the Russian spider is just happy to be in power and control of its own population, is trying to breed a larger Ruski population because it realizes that its own system is collapsing. The globalist spider is a transhumanist, power-tripping spider that believes it's God and is attacking anything decent. So that's what we're dealing with here. And I mean, this is a big deal. I've got masses of incredible news here. And I don't know how I even get into the other news on the stock market and the police state and attacks on internet freedom, which we will cover, while we've got this Ukraine situation going on. But really, we've stated the facts. The facts are there. It's deteriorating very quickly. When we come back, I'm going to try to very calmly walk through the scenario so far and then where the scenario will go in the future or could go in the future. And it's going the very worst way. So that is all coming up today.
All right, folks.
But we've always known that a large...
We've got a couple of minutes left before we go to break. And I want to take this opportunity, because I haven't plugged at all this first hour yet, to remind you to visit drjonesnaturals.com. That's drjonesnaturals.com. Now, Next Level Foundational Energy is an amazing supplement. I am somebody who loves anything that can give me energy and focus. I love Turbo Force Plus because of the energy that it gives me and the focus. And I love Brain Force Plus and Brain Force Ultra because they make me sharper as well as energetic. But the thing that's beautiful about Next Level Foundational Energy is that it actually gives you the foundational energy that you need to go through the day instead of simply tricking your mind or your body into thinking that you have the energy, right? So these other stimulants, whether it's Adderall or Turbo Force Plus or caffeine, Turbo Force Plus is actually not a very good example because there is no crash because of the vitamins and stuff that are in it. But whether it's caffeine or energy drinks or Adderall or other stimulants, what they do is they trick your mind into thinking that you have energy. So you exert a tremendous amount of energy throughout the day. And then when it wears off, your body catches up with you and you feel it. But with this Next Level Foundational Energy, it's flushing out the cells. It's reinforcing the mitochondria, which are the powerhouse of your cells, like the battery of your cells. And it actually gives you the energy. So you don't just feel like you have more energy. You actually are more energetic. And not only does it give you the energy that you need to fight the info war and do your job and be the best American that you can be, but it also helps Alex and his family and InfoWars fight back against the assault on truth and justice and freedom of speech. We know that Alex has been under attack. We know that InfoWars has been under attack. We know that his family has been under attack. So by going to drjonesnaturals.com, that's drjonesnaturals.com, you can fight back against the New World Order, against the globalists, and get the foundational energy that you need to be the best you can be. Stick with us, folks.
So what's the fix here? Because it seems like the fix is what Donald Trump was heading towards, right? Which was, you should investigate these people. Like, yeah. Somebody should investigate these people. Victor Shokin has gone on Fox News and said, Joe Biden got me fired because I was looking into the corruption of his family. And if you have any hope, and I'm not trying to blackpill here, but the more you see that the Bidens are effectively cutouts for the CIA and the intel agencies, the less hope I have that any of them will ever be prosecuted meaningfully. I mean, it seems like the only way to fix something like this is sunlight as the best disinfectant.
Sunlight is the only way. You know, and I went into the Oversight Committee a year ago. I came out and I talked to them about what happened with Burisma, but I talked to them about what was happening with Metabiota. And in their interviews of Hunter Biden, Rob Walker, who was also on the Rosemont Senate Technology Partners Group, they never investigated. They don't even want to mention Metabiota. They talk about the, you know, funny money transfers. They talk about Burisma. They talk about what Joe did with Burisma because that's an impeachable offense. But this Metabiota stuff is dark and dirty, and it's very serious. It goes all the way into the Wuhan Institute of Technology and that virus, the pandemic, the fake pandemic. And that's the CIA, in my opinion, was behind it. Avril Haines came into the White House in 2014 in November after they set up this research alliance with China, this, you know, infectious disease. As Ron Klain was there, she was there. She's now the person who's in charge, and she stayed there with the NSC for 2 years. She was a senior. She came from the CIA into the NSC, worked with Obama closely as one of his top security aides, and she was there at the meetings in 2017 that happened in January, right before Donald Trump came in, where they reinstated gain of function. They said, oh, it's okay, we'll redo it. And the people that were in those meetings was Fauci, Klain, Avril Haines, and Avril Haines is now in charge of investigating what happened in Wuhan. And of course, she doesn't see anything wrong that happened in Wuhan. They can't really tell what happened in Wuhan. She's a person that has to be named. The CIA operative that's named in the laptop email is a woman named Tara O'Toole. Tara O'Toole has never been called in for investigation. These are the people that the sunlight needs to hit. Tara O'Toole, Avril Haines, Fauci, and Ron Klain.
Yeah, why did Dr. Fauci go to the CIA so many times off the books? It doesn't make any sense. And Dr. Fauci's funding, of course, comes from the intelligence agencies. You can track all that back to the Patriot Act. So it's not crazy to think this. Also, a clip that I cannot get out of my head, Mike, till my dying days, I will not be able to forget that Dr. Fauci, upon Donald Trump's inauguration, so it was a day before Donald Trump's inauguration, gives a speech and he says, this next administration is going to be a surprise pandemic. Guarantee it. He says it. It clips up. We've tweeted it a million times. How can you say something with such a surety? Like, how is that possible? It's so unbelievably suspicious. It's malevolent. It's so disorienting. How evil these people are and what they're willing to do for power. And it's why I'm so glad that there are people who actually tell the truth. It's a dangerous thing to tell the truth these days. Mike McCormick is one of those people. Here's his book, once again, ladies and gentlemen, Amazon bestseller, The Case to Impeach and Imprison Joe Biden, from Joe Biden's former stenographer. Nobody would know better. Mike McCormick, God bless you and Godspeed.
Thanks, Benny. Thanks for having me on and talk about all this dirty stuff.
Just about 1 minute, Mike McCormick is going to be joining us. He is the former White House stenographer, Mike McCormick, who traveled the world with Vice President Joe Biden from 2011 to 2017. He's recently published The Case to Impeach and Imprison Joe Biden, now advancing quickly up the Amazon's bestsellers ranking. McCormick's eyewitness account follows a timeline of Vice President Joe Biden's White House activities, cross-referenced with emails from the verified Hunter Biden laptop and Obama White House documents, some of which are transcripts McCormick prepared as part of his stenographer duties. This is evidence McCormick believes he should testify about to investigating authorities. Visit mmccormick.substack.com and stick with us, folks, because we're going to be speaking with him on the other side with Harrison Smith in the studio as well. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show, folks. I am Chase Geiser, your host today, joined in studio by Harrison Smith. And we have an incredible guest today. I am particularly excited to have this conversation with you, Mike McCormick, because I am someone who had a long conversation with Jack Maxey years ago on a podcast about the contents of the Hunter Biden laptop. And I have to admit to you that I didn't even know really who he was before he came on. I'd forgotten that the podcast was scheduled. So in a frenzy, I pulled myself together and I talked to him. And all of a sudden, I was met with the heaviest of information and details that I could possibly have imagined, totally unprepared. So where does this journey begin for you, Mike? Are you somebody who is a Democrat still? Were you a Democrat at the time? How do you end up working for the Biden administration? I guess it was the Obama administration at the time.
Yeah. Hey, Chase. Hey, Harrison. How are you guys?
Good. Thank you.
And thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
So to answer your question, I'm a registered independent, and I started in the White House as a press office stenographer in 2002. Mm-hmm. So I worked with Bush and Cheney. Worked there about 5 or 6 years and then left for a couple of years and tried a job outside of the White House. Didn't work out well. Came right back to the White House in 2010. They hired me because I was experienced and I was good at my job. I worked my way in. We were contractors. And so, but in 2014, Obama federalized our office. So then we became federal employees. Mm. And that didn't work out too well when cancel culture came around for people who liked Trump, which was me. So I worked with Obama. It was hard. It was a heavy lift in our office that Joe Biden was the vice president. He was an egotist. And still is, but he could talk a lot more back then And he was aggressive about talking about himself and promoting himself. Long hours, lots of work. My boss asked me to volunteer. She said, you know, we need somebody who can really handle this. We want to win the contract back. So I did. And it worked out well for me. I had young kids. I didn't want to travel every weekend, every day, which is what you do when you're covering the vice president in our office. But with the vice president, I travel with Biden internationally, Russia, Ukraine, China. And so that's when I learned, I knew basically where Joe Biden was pretty much day by day throughout his vice presidency. And what I did when I got hold of the Hunter Biden laptop, and I got it through Marco Polo. In 2021, Garrett Ziegler heard about me and said, you know what? You should have this laptop. You know a lot about Biden. You should have it. And he just gave it to me for free. And ever since then, I've had a real good collaboration with Garrett and the Marco Polo guys. And I don't know if you guys have ever had them on your program, but they can do a deeper dive into the Hunter Biden laptop than Jack Maxey can. They put out the report on the Biden laptop. That is basically the document that the Oversight Committee is using as their sort of tablet to work their way through this investigation. So I got a hold of that and I started writing the Substack, and the stuff I found in it is extremely disturbing. And that's where we'll start talking, whatever you want to ask.
Yeah. So I know that there was a video that you brought to us, maybe the first couple of minutes you wanted to watch, 36 hours in Ukraine with Vice President Biden. Would it be good for us to start with a couple of minutes of this video and then unpack it
just
together?
Like a minute and a half.
Okay. Let's run the first 90 seconds of this video, guys, and then we'll unpack it from there.
Hey, folks. Joe Biden. I just got off an 8-9 hour flight from Washington to the capital of Ukraine, Kyiv. And I met with the mayor of Kyiv, who is a world famous boxer, but he has another fight in his hands. One is Moscow crossing the border and violating international norms. And the second is endemic corruption that oligarchs have been pursuing and engaged in for decades. And it's a hard, hard fight. We are committed to help them on both scores. That's what I'm here about. And I'm going to be talking with the president, with the prime minister, and then on Tuesday, sitting down to address their RADA and make it clear that American support is real, but we expect them to step up. I'm here to listen. I'm not here to talk. I'm here to listen. I want to know what you would most like to see my country doing.
All these people, every one of them, gave their life for freedom. Every single one of these people here, ordinary Ukrainians. This government has an obligation.
So my question for you about this video is this the same trip that Joe Biden famously referred to on a panel later on, where he had threatened to withhold U.S. aid to Ukraine unless they fired the prosecutor that was looking into Burisma? Or is that an isolated incident?
Exact same trip, correct.
Wow, I could just tell.
And I was on that trip with him. I was on the plane with him for that trip. Wow. And I go into great detail in my book about this trip. But this is based, that was a crime. We just watched Joe Biden commit a crime. When he walked off that plane and he shook the guy's hands, the guy he was shaking the hand with was the mayor of Kyiv. His name is Vitaly Klitschko. Notice how Biden didn't name him, right? Mm-hmm. Well, Vitaly Klitschko at the time was the mayor of Kyiv and is still the mayor of Kyiv. That's the guy. So Biden shakes his hand, and next to him is the ambassador to Ukraine, Jeffrey Pyatt, and standing next to him is Victoria Nuland, Assistant Secretary of State. Biden kind of gives her a little peck on the cheek there.
Right,
that's Victoria
woman.
Nuland. So yeah, exactly. So this is Joe Biden's briefing book. That's actually a top secret briefing book. They put the picture into the video and edited out the top secret part, but that's how careless he was with his classified documents. That's a classified document he's showing the world. you know, partially. So back to the thing. Joe Biden, 2 days before he was walking down the stairs to shake hands with this guy, Klitschko was on the board of Burisma Geothermal, working directly under Hunter Biden. 2 days before that, there was a Burisma board meeting in Dubai. And over the summer, the Oversight Committee investigators asked Devin Archer about this meeting. And Devin Archer said, yeah, I was at the meeting. He didn't name Klitschko as being there. He said there were other executives there. And he said Hunter was on the phone with his dad. Well, his dad calls and they have this phone call. And Archer said, I didn't hear what the phone call was. I don't know what they said. And Hunter he kind of danced around it when they asked him. He didn't really own up to calling his dad and talking to him in that instance in the transcript that I read. But was Klitschko there at the board meeting? And was that Joe Biden's chance to say, hey, I want Klitschko to be my greeter when I get off Air Force Two? I'm going to be in Ukraine in 2 days. And to back up just a month from that board meeting, Hunter Biden got an email on November 2nd, 2015 from Burisma executive, a guy named Vadim Pozharsky, who's writing on behalf of Mykola Tlachevsky. And he demands deliverables from the group that Hunter is with. There's a Blue Star Strategies group, but the deliverables are way above what Blue Star Strategies can deliver. He demands a visit by a high-ranking government official. That's Joe Biden. That's the request they give to Hunter to get in touch with Joe and have him come visit us. And we want you to stop this investigation into Mykola Tlachevsky. We want this high-ranking American official to talk to Poroshenko. 2 days after that email was received by Hunter and says, we'll get back to you on this ASAP, Joe Biden gets on the phone with President Poroshenko. There's a White House document acknowledging this. And at the end of the phone call, he says, we're going to tie the $1 billion IMF loan guarantee to your fight against corruption. Well, guess what? That's exactly what he was there to.
Looks like we might have lost connection here.
Yeah, folks, we're gonna try to reconnect with Mike McCormick there. It looks like his Skype may have frozen, and let him finish his thought there. But it's so crazy because I didn't realize that famous visit to Ukraine was in like a mini doc that they put out as a promo.
Yeah, I didn't either. It's amazing that it was 10 years ago. I mean, he was already an old man back then. And of course, look at him now. And there's already so many things that I've just been jotting down what Mr. McCormick has been saying, because there's so many things that intrigue me, including, you know, just the personal aspect of Joe Biden. We know that if you just watch speeches of Joe Biden, or anytime he's in public, if somebody sort of contradicts him or questions him a little bit, he immediately, that switch flips. And suddenly he's just yelling and he's vicious and angry, and it's something to behold. So I'd like to get into some of that as well. Looks like Mike is back here.
Absolutely. Mike, are you with us?
Yeah. Hey, guys.
All right. So where you left off, if you know where we lost you, you were talking about Tlachevsky specifically and how the aid was tied into the anti-corruption.
Right. So that whole trip was a crime scene. That was Joe Biden doing the bidding of Ukrainian oligarchs, specifically because his son was on the board of Burisma. Now, I was interviewed by the House Oversight Committee informally about a year ago. And I'll tell you a little inside information. I don't think they're going very far with this Oversight Committee investigation into Biden. I was, as part of the interview, I needed parking. So I called, you know, I was back and forth with funny interviewers, and I go, can you get me to a parking pass? And he goes, yeah, I'll direct you to the parking site. So I pull up in front of their office building. He jumps in the car. We go around the corner. As I'm driving there, I see Congressman Matt Gaetz standing on the corner. And I'm like, hey, there's Congressman Matt Gaetz. I like Matt Gaetz. He's America first. He's, you know, really pushing for Trump's point of view. Well, the guy next to me, the investigator next to me, just kind of grumbles. He groans. And I had the impression from that point on that this interview they were doing, I think, was just to check off a box. It was just a formality. And so I sat down and talked with him. I told him about this event. I didn't actually know about this video at the time. I didn't know the video connected so directly to Joe at the time. But in that interview with them, they told me how much they were focusing on this trip. And that's what made me look at this trip. And when I started looking at the trip, I found the email that Hunter goes back and forth. And that email, by the way, is verified by Hunter in testimony. The Democrats are always trying to say, oh, this was Russian disinformation in the laptop. It's not real. But the Oversight Committee got Hunter to admit that he had done this email. He had replied to that email. It's in his testimony. So that email is it's infallible. They can't attack it. So that whole trip was a crime. And it ended with him getting rid of Shokin. There's a lot in the book. I talk about the reporters that were with me on the book. Peter Baker from the New York Times was there. Margaret Tolov, she's now at Axios, was there. And, you know, what I put in the book is a direct repudiation of their reporting. I'm like, Joe Biden was on this trip. It was a criminal trip. And they should go back and redo their reporting or report on the updated version of what's happening based on what's in the laptop. And they're not doing that. They're covering for Joe Biden to this day.
And that's amazing that it wasn't until after all this and when the laptop comes out. And the impression I'm getting, tell me if I'm wrong, is that sort of that put everything you'd experienced before into a different frame. So like while you were with Joe Biden, did anything stand out to you that you thought, oh, there's something shady going on here? Or was it only after seeing the laptop that you started sort of connecting the dots and realizing what was really going on behind the scenes?
When I was with Joe, I knew he was a knucklehead. He was unpresidential. He talked like a goof. Foreign leaders didn't take him seriously. I wrote a book about it that came out in March 2020 called Joe Biden Unauthorized and then 2020 Crack of the Democratic Party. And it came out and immediately the shutdowns hit and nobody talked about Joe Biden for almost 9 months. And so, yes, I knew he was unpresidential, but I didn't know how evil he was until I got a hold of the laptop. And what's in the laptop is just evil. This, you know, what he did in Burisma, what he did in Ukraine with Burisma was a crime. But there was another grift that he was doing in Ukraine with a company called Metabiota, and he was doing that with Hunter. And the difference between the Metabiota grift and the Burisma grift is there's not a public reckoning or record of how much Joe got from it. Not right. Like Hunter's, you know, million upon million dollars salary from Burisma to be on the board. That's if Joe Biden is doing what I said he's doing, which is changing U.S. policy for Burisma, that's impeachable offense. That's a crime. That's misuse of government property, misuse of, fraud, waste, and abuse. So, but what he did with Burisma was even darker. And what he did with Metabiota was even darker. And we can talk about that. It has to do with the Wuhan virus. It has to do with a visit he took to China in 2013.
Yeah, I want to dive in on Metabiota a little bit. So let me just provide some context of what my understanding is at this moment, and please correct me if anything is wrong with this. So the first thing is, my understanding is that Metabiota is a company that specializes in research on viruses. That's my understanding in a very basic surface level, superficial, supposedly. And
Metabiota has actually been sold, and it's now been divided into two pieces. So the company now known as Metabiota does something different than it did in 2014. Okay. And the new company does this pandemic research, and I don't remember the name of it.
Okay. And my understanding is that Rosemont Seneca, which was Hunter Biden's investment firm that he was a partner in, was invested $500,000 in Metabiota. Is that correct?
So Rosemont Seneca Technology Partners is a five-person company that Hunter started. Mm-hmm. They were the investors in Metabiota. And the way the investment went was there were two guys with Rosemont Seneca Technology Partners, I'll call them RSTP, two guys with RSTP, and they had half of the investments in Metabiota. And then Rosemont Seneca Partners, which was Hunter Biden, Devin Archer, it included John Kerry's stepson, Chris Hines, and another guy who was working with Hunter named Eric Schwerin. So those guys got half. And there were further divisions down the road with other people brought in. But the Rosemont Seneca Technology Partners investment in Metabiota began in December 2013, days after Joe Biden gets back from China, where he had a long, suspicious meeting with Xi Jinping. And I was on that trip. That's the trip where Hunter went on Air Force Two to China, and he started this big investment that the Oversight Committee has been looking into with CEFC.
Right.
It's like a energy conglomerate. But on the side, they started also this thing with Metabiota. 2 months after they started investing heavily with Metabiota, Goldman Sachs was investing with them. And 2 months after they returned from that trip, Metabiota gets a huge $18 million contract with the Defense Threat Reduction Agency in the Republic of Georgia to basically do biodefense, what they call biodefense.
Is that different or the same as the $23.7 million DOD contract they got?
It's basically the same contract. Okay. And I think the $23 million was added as part of that 18.
Right. They extended it or something. Yeah.
Yeah. It moved on through a variety of years. It started in 2014 and moved through 2018, I think.
Right. So Joe Biden's the vice president of the United States. His son is invested in both directly and indirectly, or at least indirectly, in Metabiota. And Metabiota is getting tens of millions of dollars from the federal government. And there are allegations that this is kicking back. So I have one more question. I don't mean to hog it, but I've been in interested in this. So Harrison, I'll let you take over with the next question.
No, you're the expert. I know Metabiota is like your pet project.
Now Zolchevsky was obviously the invested in a leader at Burisma. Was he someone who was also invested in Metabiota?
There's information that indicates that. Marco Polo has pretty good information on that. I'm not sure, but there are some emails where Devin Archer and Hunter are discussing, let's get Vadim to talk about Metabiota, get them to invest in it.
So I'm interested in, you know, how this works behind the scenes, how the sausage is made. Since you were there, you know, behind the scenes, and when you talk about, you know, Joe Biden goes down, he meets Jeffrey Piat and Victoria Nuland. I mean, how much was Joe Biden like the kingpin? Was he orchestrating things, or were there other people behind the scenes that were sort of setting the tone and helping things going, and Joe Biden was just, you know, working on his stuff behind the scenes? Like, how much of it was Joe Biden himself as the crime lord, you know, orchestrating all of this, and how much was he just sort of playing a part and going where people told him to go?
So what I do in the book is I laid out, there's three parts. The first part is a deep dive into Metabiota. I'm sorry, a deep dive into Burisma. Mm. And I don't talk about Metabiota in the book, but Joe Biden is clearly the mastermind of the Burisma kickback scheme. Mm. And it goes stage by stage. It starts in 2014 in March. He sets this Burisma grift up with an old friend of his, Polish president, Alexander Kwasniewski. He draws in Hunter. He draws in Archer. Then he goes to Burisma. He goes to Ukraine. And as he's flying to Ukraine, I'm a witness on the plane as a stenographer. Jake Sullivan walks back and starts telling the press about the relief they're going to bring, the assistance they're bringing for the energy programs over there. And two of the four things he names directly benefit Burisma. Mm. So Jake Sullivan is in this. So this is Joe Biden's air flight into Ukraine. This is December 21st, 2014. Jake Sullivan is now part of the conspiracy. I raised this to the FBI over a year ago. I said, hey, I'm a witness to a crime. It involves Joe Biden and Jake Sullivan on Air Force Two. They've never gotten back to me.
Right.
But they've also haven't arrested me. And if I had lied to them about any aspect of my witness tip that I sent to their witness tip website, I'd be in jail right now. So they know it's true. And they've validated my evidence by not arresting me.
Yeah, that is an interesting revelation, because the way it's presented most of the time is Hunter Biden's doing all this business stuff and he's sort of bringing in his dad or going, look, that's my dad, so you should hire me. That's all Hunter Biden doing stuff, and Joe Biden's kind of being used by him as a prop to get more money. But you're saying Joe Biden really was the instigator of all of this, and it was him bringing Hunter in, not the other way around.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. Hunter was just the money. He was just the money man. Joe right. was out there doing that with Burisma. And, you know, there's a part of the book where I talk about trips we took to Honduras. Joe set up with some of his operatives stuff in Honduras with cartel affiliated government officials. And Hunter wasn't even in on that. Hunter had nothing to do with Honduras, but that was all Joe's grift. And Honduras got millions. And, you know, the guy that he was working with, a former president, Juan Orlando Hernandez, is now going to prison because Joe had to prosecute him.
Stick with us.
Shut him up.
We are going to a short break here. We're on radio, so in 4 minutes, we'll be back in studio with you and Harrison Smith. Stick with us, folks. Mike, I want to dive in a little bit to this dynamic between Joe and Hunter, because what's really interesting about what you said at the end of the last segment is how Joe Biden was the mastermind. Of course, it's hard to believe that Joe Biden's ever been a mastermind of anything now, but I guess, you know, 10 years ago, things were different. But he was the mastermind and Hunter was a pawn rather than the other way around. And there's a couple things about that that are intriguing to me. First of all, to pull off a scam, for lack of a better term, this sophisticated, that implies to me that Joe Biden has been doing this kind of thing for years. So if I decided today that I wanted to be a con artist and I somehow got lucky enough to be vice president of the United States, I would not even know where to begin if I wanted to do something like this. So the fact that he was able to pull this off so seamlessly seems to me to imply that he's got a bunch of experience in this. The second thing I want to ask you about is Joe Biden is famous for saying that Hunter Biden is the smartest person he knows. And it's hard to believe that, because on the public side of things, all we see are these videos and images from the laptop of Hunter Biden obviously tweaking out on crack or cocaine or whatever, different drugs. From your experience, having been around the Bidens for years, was it the case that Hunter Biden used to be fairly sharp and declined? Was he always kind of like what we see from the laptop? And can you dive in a little bit to how Joe Biden became such an expert at this level of corruption so abruptly?
It wasn't abrupt. It was over decades. Mm. You know, Joe Biden was 50 years in the Senate. And over the course of that time, I mean, he was at 45 years, I think. I think he's at just over 50 now. So just between over 40, 10 years ago when he was doing these grips. He had a whole cadre of operatives that were very close to him, and he knew how to use them in through Washington. And one thing Joe Biden does really well is he can start things in Washington without people knowing it and stop things in Washington without people knowing it. And you see that every day in this lawfare case against President Trump. And so let's go to the grift that Joe Biden did. I'm going to go to the beginning of the Metabiota crypt. So I just put out a Substack yesterday. Basically says, COVID, was it something Joe said? That's the title. And the reason I put it out was because in 2011, I was on a trip with him to, in August of 2011, to China. And he was meeting Vice President Xi. So at the time, the Chinese had set up this deal where And the Chinese set it up. Obama tried to pretend that it was half his idea. It wasn't. The Chinese knew they were going to pull Joe Biden in, and they pulled him in. He's their Manchurian candidate. That started in January 2011. And that's almost days later is when Hunter starts doing business with Chinese businessmen aligned with the Chinese Communist Party. So in August, Joe goes over to Chengdu, and he gives this speech. Chengdu is way down in the south. It's near giant panda land near the Himalayas. And he gives a speech, and basically he confronts the Chinese with the fact that their one-child policy means they have too many old people. They have too many old people. And the reason I say was it something that Joe said was because shortly after Joe comes back from that, the Chinese changed their policy. Well, if you look at COVID killed primarily old people. It's almost like it took them 10 years to develop this gain of function research that was done in China with our money, with our expertise to kill old people, to kill their old people. And we never found out about it until after it was too late. And the Chinese still haven't really told how many people have died in their country of COVID. And we know what happened in our country. So that was 2011. In 2012 to 2011, what happened in China was the CIA was losing all their Chinese assets. The Chinese Communist Party was going around arresting them, imprisoning them, or killing them. And they had this dearth of informants. So they had to come up with an idea. And I think the idea became Metabiota. They had Metabiota at the time was working in China under something called Predict One. It was something that Obama set up in 2009. And Predict One had these guys going around in caves getting bat. They were looking at bat scat in caves with Chinese researchers. And they were working alongside the Wuhan Institute of Virology. They were working alongside EcoHealth Alliance. This was Metabiota, headed by Nathan Wolf. Nathan Wolf at the time was a golden boy of the World Economic Forum. They were
pictured with Ghislaine Maxwell on the internet. You can find pictures of them with Ghislaine Maxwell. Go on. I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's right. That's right. And so they do this Predict One. Well, Predict One was a five-year funding project. Joe Biden goes to China in December of 2013. The funding for Predict One runs out in the fall of 2014. And what happens in 2013, 2014? Ebola erupts in Africa.
Right.
One of Metabiota's projects was to collect Ebola samples. They had a lab in Kinema, Sierra Leone, very close to where the Ebola outbreak began. And they were seen as being, by the locals, very suspicious of how they were handling the Ebola outbreak. So Ebola breaks out in the spring, and all of a sudden, everybody's surging, assistance over there. Obama eventually had to send the U.S. Army Medical Corps over there to control it. But you know who else went over there? The Chinese went over there too. And so the Chinese learned from Ebola, and so did Obama. And what Obama did in October of 2014 was Ebola came back to America. And that was a crisis. And you know who was telling everybody it was a crisis? Donald Trump was a businessman then, and he had a huge Twitter following. He was tweeting about Obama's doing a terrible job because Ebola's coming here. And then it came here. And there's emails in laptop emails where the Metabiota guys are going, the Rosemont Seneca Technology Partners guys are going, wow, Metabiota's valuation just doubled. Ebola landed here in America. Hmm. Weeks later, they name Ron Klain as the Ebola czar. Ron Klain is one of Joe Biden's most trusted operatives. Why were they naming an operative, a political operative, as the Ebola czar and not naming a medical professional?
Right.
And that was a question Ted Cruz asked then. Well, it's turned into a disaster. What happened out of that was, as I said, Predict One was coming to the end of its funding stream, and there's this Ebola crisis. They generated so much more funding for the Predict Two, and out of that came an agreement. So this is October 2014. They named Klain the Ebola czar. The same day they named Klain the Ebola czar, Obama decrees, we're going to pause all funding for gain-of-function research in America. It's just too dangerous. Well, 2 weeks after that, Obama goes to Beijing, and he meets with Xi. And in that meeting, they decide to have a collaboration on infectious disease research. So this Predict Two money is what went into the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Mm. It went into
Are you implying that Joe Biden was personally invested in the manufacture of COVID-19?
That's what I believe. Yeah, through Rosemont Seneca Technology Partners. Hunter Biden had it. It turns
so
out
Obama
he had
founded ISIS and Biden founded COVID-19.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I believe. And that's why I told this. I told exactly what I'm telling you to a year ago to the Oversight Committee. That's why they won't have me come and testify.
They don't care.
You know, that's why I wrote the book. The book I have, the evidence I have in the book about Burisma, if I testified to that under oath, would be the evidence that would impeach Joe Biden. But they don't want me to testify under oath, whether it's in front of the grand jury. And I've sent a copy of the book to the grand jury lawyers.
Well, they've been sitting on all sorts of evidence for years, Mike. We are coming up on a break here. Stick with us, please, because I want to hear more from you on the other side. Thank you.
Some of these crimes being revealed and people saying he should be impeached. And I think, well, that's a start, but actually prison is the appropriate response for what these people are doing. If you had to answer like in one sentence, or, you know, obviously you can take as long as you want, but if you're talking to a Democrat who thinks Joe Biden is the greatest thing since sliced bread, and they say, why should he be in prison? What did he do to go to prison for? What would be your answer? What is the most criminal thing you've discovered through your research of Joe Biden?
Well, he's behind the Wuhan virus pandemic. He's behind it.
That's something.
And he, you know, and then he's also behind opening up the southern border to the cartels. Right. Those are two examples of treason. He let the Chinese develop that Wuhan virus to the point where it became what it became. And, you know, his henchmen, so Ron Klain became the chief proponent of the pandemic warnings alongside Fauci from 2017 on. Once Trump came in, they didn't expect Trump to win. Right. I mean, I was in that White House. They were shocked. And I was delighted. I used to have to watch Trump rallies on YouTube just to get through a boring Joe Biden speech. And they realized that Hillary Clinton was just phoning it in and she was in trouble about middle of October. And all of a sudden it all changed. So I'll get real back to Metabiota. CIA jumps into the Metabiota story in 2014 in October. There's an email, a laptop, Hunter Biden laptop email. These Rosemont Senate Technology Partners guys are like, hey, we got a call from InQtel people, one person named Tara O'Toole. Well, Tara O'Toole is, InQtel is the venture capital arm of CIA, and Tara O'Toole was in charge of their biowarfare stuff. And she has a very dark history. So does InQtel. And what's his name? Robert F. Kennedy Jr. did a great job on it in his book, The Truth About Fauci, or The Real Anthony Fauci. So they jump in. And they're like, hey, you know, InQtel wants to talk to Nathan Wolf. And then the next thing that happens is Hunter Biden gets dumped out of Rosemont Seneca Technology Partners because of the leak about his cocaine use. So other investors say, yeah, we can't have him. So he gets dumped out of it. So Hunter and Joe are involved financially in the early rounds of it. They've got a stake, a financial stake in the early rounds. But then the rest of this RSTP guys move on and become investors through something called pilot growth in Metabiota. So 2014, you've got the beginning of Predict 2. Donald Trump comes in 2016, and one of the things he says is, I'm going to cut funding. In 2019, Predict 2 ends in September. 3 months later, we get hit with Ebola. I mean, I'm sorry, with the Wuhan virus.
And basically, the reports are indicating that the virus leaked in September, too. So even though it didn't really start until 2020, it is COVID-19 because at the end of 2019, that's when it allegedly sprung out of Wuhan, right?
Right. And Fauci and Klain, basically from 2017 on, almost within a week of before Trump even comes into office, are warning there's going to be another pandemic in 5 years. They timed it to 5 years.
Wow.
And that's when the funding ran out. And Fauci, for the first time, was facing budget cuts under Trump. And they didn't like that. And the other, you know, biowarfare contractors didn't like the cuts. So going back to Trump wins in 2016, then in just after he wins, Obama's president's council on Council of Advisors on Science and Technology, PCAST, comes out with this thing in the mid-November of 2016. Don't do anything more with gain of function. It's really dangerous. Don't do it. 2 months later, what does Obama do? He reinstates gain of function funding. Right before Trump comes in, Trump doesn't really have much say in it. Obama does. He reinstates it. And there's a meeting in the White House. This is like mid-January 2017. So there's a meeting. Who's there? Avril Haines, mm-hmm. Lisa Monaco, and Susan Rice are part of this. And April Haynes had been in the White House as an advisor. She came from the CIA, yeah. Worked in the National Security Council. And you know who else worked in the National Security Council then? Alexander Vindman and that guy, Sam Mella. So these guys were back and forth to Ukraine. And they were doing a lot of virus development in Ukraine. And that's what those guys probably would have known about. And Hunter Biden would have known about that too. Devin Archer took a trip in 2014 to Ukraine, and he went to the embassy. And, you know, what I talk about is I went to the oversight committee and I told him all this stuff, and they didn't ask him, did you go to the U.S. embassy in 2014 when you went there? They never asked him that question. They didn't ask him about Rosemont Seneca Technology Partners. None of those questions. So the oversight committee investigation is steering away from what Joe did with Metabiota, what Hunter did with Metabiota. They've raised it once with a guy named Rob Walker. In the very beginning of his interview, they say, were you part of Rosemont Seneca Technology Partners? Yes, I was. Wasn't Hunter Biden kicked out of there in October 2014? Yes, he was. Okay, thanks. And that's as far as they go. And they don't go into anything. So back to this January timeframe, they reinstate gain of function. They put this together, kind of a fake pandemic tabletop exercise for incoming Trump people. And then Joe Biden goes on a trip at the very end of his vice presidency to Ukraine and to the World Economic Forum in Davos. And who does he meet there? He meets Xi Jinping. And what happens days after Joe Biden leaves there? They announce, Bill Gates announces this new kind of vaccine technology they're coming out with. He calls it RNA, DNA, and he announces a big new vaccine program called CEPI, Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Investment, I think, CEPI. And that all happened within days before Trump even got into the office. They were doing this in the World Economic Forum. This is the globalists setting up the Wuhan pandemic years ahead of time. And they spent the next 4 or 5 years getting it in place with the CIA. Tara O'Toole was part of it. They did all these tabletop pandemic exercises. Event 201 was part of it. Right. There was one called Clade X. And in Event 201, that's when George Gao, who was the Chinese, he was one of the guys that went with the Chinese to fight Ebola in Sierra Leone. He's sitting next to April Haynes. She's now the Department of, Director of National Intelligence. She's a CIA operative. And they're having this conversation. And that's why she's not investigating. They knew everything that was coming. Right. And they set it up because they were getting their budgets cut and because they didn't like Trump. And who was behind all this? Ron Klain. Ron Klain knew what to do with changing the way the vote structured. They had all this information behind the scenes as they did the Ebola shutdown. He's the Ebola czar. He was setting basically they reverse engineered Ebola to set up what would happen with Wuhan.
Now they're trying to do the same thing with Disease X, where they're creating these policies for something that hasn't happened yet. So when it happens, they can just trigger the operation and all the infrastructure, the dominoes fall and everything falls into place. So it almost seems like, this is just speculation, of course, that out of a sense of bitterness, as soon as the funding was cut off in 2019, it almost seems like they're like, screw you, Trump, and they just leaked it on purpose. Do you think it was an accident or do you think it was purposeful?
I think it was absolutely purposeful. I think Wuhan, Wuhan virus, COVID-19, it was a result of traitors and criminals in both China and America. That's who did it. Wow. And, I mean, Mike Pompeo was the CIA guy in 2017 when the CIA invested in Metabiota. They invested in him. And then he became the Secretary of State. The Secretary of State works with USAID. USAID was a chief funder for Predict 2. So it wasn't just Democrats. You know, there were a lot of Republicans around this. And I got in touch with Republican Senator, I think is from Kansas. I think his name is Marshall last year. to going out and tell him what I knew, to basically tell him all this. They were really excited to have me down and tell them, and all of a sudden it just went to radio silence. They're like,
wow, it's almost like they don't actually want to know what they don't want new information. They just want to know what you know because they already know it. Mike, it's been an honor and a pleasure to have you on the Alex Jones Show today. We are coming up on the end of this hour. Mike McCormick, folks, check out his book, The Case to Impeach and Imprison Joe Biden. More news on the other side.
Do you hear Trump's take on the JFK assassination, why he didn't release the files?
Yeah, I know what Trump's take is.
He said that if you knew what I know, you wouldn't tell people either, which is crazy.
Well, what does that mean? That's his position on the UAP thing as well.
Yeah.
Actually. And that's a lot of people's position on it. I mean, you know, Trump is saying, of course, the CIA had knowledge of it. That is known. I mean, the whole thing, it's like, it's so funny. There's so many levels and there's so much I don't understand. But the whole JFK conspiracy industry, and it really is an industry, more books written on that than almost any historical topic, is filled with wackos, right? There are a lot of wackos in there. But it obscures, that fact obscures the larger fact, which is the facts themselves tell an unbelievable story.
Yeah.
And so, whatever, I could get into it at great length. But yeah, they're still classifying documents 61 years later. Both Trump and Joe Biden have, in violation of my read of federal law, kept those documents secret. There's no living person connected to the Kennedy assassination. It was a couple generations ago. There's no one person whose secrets are being protected. It's an institution, or maybe countries. There may have been countries involved too. I mean, I don't know the answer, but there's clearly something worth protecting. And I know that when I spoke to someone who'd seen the documents, okay, 2 years ago, and I got one fact out of him, which is, yes, the CIA was involved. And by CIA is a huge organization, but James Jesus Angleton, the head of the operations directorate, had knowledge of this, which I think is well known. But that's the view of someone who saw the documents. So I thought that was news. So I went on TV and said that. The next day, I'll never forget it, I went quail hunting and I was driving back and I got a phone call from Mike Pompeo's lawyer. Mike Pompeo was the Secretary of State, but before then he was the director of the CIA. And in that position, he plotted the murder of Julian Assange. So he is a criminal as far as I'm concerned. But, his lawyer called me and said, you know, you should know that anyone who tells you the contents of classified documents has committed a crime. He's threatening me. He's in my car. I'll never, with my dog sitting next to me, I'll never forget this. And I said, are you really saying that to reveal that the U.S. government had a role in the murder of a democratically elected president, to say that out loud, that's the crime? What about the actual crime, which is murdering a president? Like, you're covering up for that, Mike Pompeo.
What did he say to that?
He had no response at all. And so Mike Pompeo is the one who pressed Trump to keep those documents secret. And so it's like, what's crazy to me is not just that Pompeo did that. I think Pompeo is a really sinister person and a criminal. I think that. I think that because the facts suggest that. He was caught. Yahoo News, Mike Isikoff wrote a long piece on this several years ago. His employees went to Mike Isikoff and said, hey, Mike Pompeo is plotting to murder Julian Assange, who has never even been charged with a crime in the United States, as CIA director. That's illegal. You're not allowed. Federal employees are not allowed to just kill people they don't like. Okay?
So
just,
obviously, just Mike Pompeo here. Seems to have a history of corruption. I just wanted to show that clip, that segment from the Joe Rogan podcast with Tucker Carlson in the context of the last segment we had with Mike in the hour previously. Now, in the next segment, after we go to break here for about a minute, we are going to have Peyman Motahedeh, who is an Iranian-born Jewish immigrant who moved to the United States in 1977 and became an American citizen in 1989. Today, he is a prominent speaker and educator, especially known for his discovery and understanding of the history of the Federal Reserve, IRS, and federal tax laws in theory and practice, with many stellar in and out of court victories against the IRS and U.S. government for himself and by his students without using an attorney. He has openly not filed and paid any federal income or payroll taxes for over 30 years and has been educating and empowering other Americans to do the same. For over 30 years, on multiple occasions, IRS has investigated him criminally and otherwise, but has been unable to find Paymon to have broken any tax laws. So right on the other side, we're going to have Paymon Mota Hede, and we are looking forward to that. Stick with us, folks, for more in 1 minute. Welcome back, folks, to the Alex Jones Show. I am Chase Geiser, your host this afternoon. And with us today, we have a very distinguished guest who I am personally very excited to be speaking with. This is Paymon Mota Hede. Now, Paymon, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. And yourself, Chase?
I'm doing very well. So just to start this conversation, when I was looking through your bio and speaking with some of the crew about speaking to you today, it made me think of a famous conspiracy theory documentary that I watched many years ago called Zeitgeist. And I would love for us to watch or listen to this clip from that documentary together so we can unpack it, because watching it as a layman, someone who doesn't know anything about taxes or the tax code other than that I hate the IRS and they send me letters all the time, watching it as a layman, I thought, is that really true? So let's watch this famous clip from this famous conspiracy theory documentary from years ago, Zeitgeist, and unpack it on the other side.
The Federal Reserve is a private corporation. It is about as federal as Federal Express. It makes its own policies and is under little regulation by the U.S. government. It is a private bank that loans all the currency at interest to the government, completely consistent with the central banking model that the country sought to escape from when it declared independence in the American Revolutionary War. Now, going back to 1913, the Federal Reserve Act was not the only bill pushed through Congress for the vested financial interests. They also pushed its partner, the federal income tax. First of all, the federal income tax is completely unconstitutional, as it is a direct, unapportioned tax, and the required number of states needed in order to ratify the amendment to allow the income tax was never legally met, and this has even been cited in modern court cases. Second, at the present day, roughly 25% of the average worker's income is taken from them via this tax. That means you work 3 months out of the year to fulfill this tax obligation. And where does that money go? Well, according to the Grace Commission report of the 1980s, 100% of what is collected is absorbed solely by interest on the federal debt and by federal government contributions to transfer payments. In other words, all individual income tax revenues are gone before one nickel is spent on the services which taxpayers expect from their government. Today, the money Americans make working 3 months out of the year goes almost entirely to the interest fees charged for the debt-based fiat currency. The fact is, the federal income tax exists to feed the Federal Reserve, federal government money machine, making sure the interest payments are always there. And third, even with the government claim as to the legality of the income tax, there is evidently no clear statute, no law in existence that requires you to pay this tax.
I really expected that, of course, there's a law that you can point to in the law book, the code, that requires you to file a tax return. Of course there is. I was at that point where I couldn't find the statute that clearly made a person liable, at least not me and most people I know. And I had no choice in my mind except to resign.
Based on the research that I did throughout the year 2000 and that I'm still doing, I have not found that law. I've asked Congress, we've asked a lot of people in the IRS, IRS commissioners, helpers. They can't answer, because if they answer, the American people are going to know that this whole thing is a fraud.
I right, haven't filed an income federal.
What do you make of this clip, having watched this? Now, like I said, I don't know whether that's accurate or not. I was just so intrigued when I saw it the first time. Is it partially true? Is it all true? What's going on, man?
Well, it is partially true in that direct taxes by the federal government on the American people must be divided up among the states. The way it was done in the late 1700s. Mm-hmm. And early 1800s was that the federal government would send a bill to each state, and the bigger states charged more from the citizens per citizen than the small states. New York could be 20 million, the other would be 1 million. The states would collect it, and then they would turn that money to the federal government minus a 10% commission for collecting the tax. But with the international banksters wanted to create a privately owned central bank called the Federal Reserve. They want to make sure that the money they're going to lend out of thin air by fraud to the federal government, that the interest for that money was going to be paid somehow to the banksters. And that's why they duped the American people into believing that the 16th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution changed the Constitution, but it did not. It did not change the taxing powers of the federal government. There's a Supreme Court case called Stanton versus Baltic Mining Company, which clearly said that the 16th Amendment did not give Congress any new taxing power whatsoever.
Wow.
So, if the Supreme Court has said clearly that the 16th Amendment did not give Congress any new taxing power, how did they write the law? As usual, they use deception and lies to get you to do what you would not normally do. The corona hoax jab is technically not a vaccine. It's mRNA gene therapy in the medical books with the FDA. But on the propaganda on TV, Biden calls it a vaccine. So the U.S. individual income tax, when they use that term on the 1040 form, you naturally think, oh, that's me. I'm the U.S. citizen of the 50 states. That's the tax return I have to fill out by law. But in actuality, the term United States in federal tax laws, like right here, this is the Bible of the IRS, the Internal Revenue Code. If you look at the definition here, it's actually the District of Columbia, not the 50 states.
Wow.
So that's how they suckered us to pay the tax we never really owed.
So it's almost as if I'm a small business owner, for example. It would be as if I just sent out an invoice to every business in the country and I didn't render any services in the hopes that people would just pay the invoice rather than dealing with investigating whether or not they actually owe me any money. So if I were to send out just invoices to everybody in the country for $500, some people would feasibly just write the check and send it back. Is that what you're saying that the IRS is basically doing? They're just sending out this form or claiming that they need you to fill out this form and you don't actually have to pay anything, but people just do it because they're deceived to believe they have to?
Basically, yes. And they've done it with the help of the corrupt major media.
Yeah.
You know, that pushed down the narrative about corona hoax, about Trump-Russia conspiracy hoax, Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, some Arab terrorists did 9/11. They've done it for a lot longer, since 1913. Way back then, in 1913, the Trump United States estate and tax law only included the District of Columbia and its U.S. territories. Philippines, Alaska, Puerto Rico, possession of the United States, but not the 50 states. But they didn't tell you what the definition was. They allowed it to be misled to believe that, oh, I'm a U.S. citizen of the 50 states. That's me. They're speaking about not be a good citizen, pay my fair share to my government.
So I've heard stories of people going to prison for tax evasion, and you obviously get threats from the IRS if you don't pay. You're going to have interest charges, and we're going to send it to debt collection and all those things. I'm familiar with the IRS as a citizen. But how is it that you've been able to avoid some of the repercussions that others have faced? So, despite whether it's legal or not for the government to imprison you for tax evasion or failure to pay tax, it seems to be happening to some people. Is that correct?
Well, first of all, obviously, I've not broken any law because for over 30 years, I have not filed and paid an income tax openly and taught many Americans openly to do the same. And since 1994, I've been under criminal investigation by the IRS.
And are you still, that tells you as we speak, are you under investigation?
Oh, yeah, probably right now. They're watching me all the time for 30 years. So what? I'm not breaking any law. Neither has Trump, who's under prosecution right now in New York, right? However, here's the difference. Coming from Iran, a dictatorship country, we had no rights, no vote. Okay, yeah, you could be thrown in prison for simply criticizing a government.
Right.
We never jury trial, tortured, executed. Coming to America, I was surprised why this country is not a free country anymore, like it was supposed to be. Mm. And I found that too many leaders of the freedom movement were too egotistical and did not want to learn from other people. I was 29 years old. This was all black hair. And I kept myself humble. I looked for the best people out there in the freedom movement and learned from the best of the best. Being humble, that way I avoided the mistakes many of these people made. For example, they did not know, just like Donald Trump, neither Alex Jones knew how corrupt and criminal the U.S. Department of Injustice is. I knew it back then, but American people did not know that.
This back
so
in the
80s. I knew their tactics. I knew their games. So I was always like a good chess player, several steps ahead of them. So when they attacked me multiple times civilly, I beat them. I beat the IRS lawyers, IRS appeals officers, in U.S. tax court and federal district court. I've even killed the criminal investigation of me in 2006 by suing them in a federal court. That's the difference.
Now, obviously, the IRS, regardless of its legality, is an intimidating organization for individuals such as myself and others. Just the average American citizen is intimidated by the IRS. I feel my heart stop or skip a beat when I see a letter from them in the mail. One of the jokes I like to tell my wife is, you know that you're an adult when you stop looking forward to the mail. So when you're a kid, you're so excited to get a letter. When you're an adult and you hate the mail, it's like that's when you know, right? And so how is it? Because the idea of fighting the IRS, even if I'm right, is overwhelmingly intimidating to me. And one of the things I noticed reading your bio before you came on, Paymon, was that you were able to beat these without hiring an attorney. I mean, was this expensive and time consuming for you? Or did you just have to show up to court like Matt Damon and Good Will Hunting and make a really sophisticated argument in front of a judge and walk out? What has this process been like for you? How many hours have you actually spent in direct combat with the IRS, not just teaching students and educating people and speaking, but actually dealing with the IRS? How many hours has this consumed of your life?
Well, a lot, but I did it all myself, and I'm glad I did because I learned.
Yeah.
You know, and what I do at Freedom Law School, which I created in 1996, is teach Americans, look, folks, number one, your rights you were born with, given by God. Two, the Constitution was written to protect your God-given rights from government abuse. Three, you must learn some basics of our system of laws and constitution so that you can stand up and defend yourself against these crooks. And if you do that, you can win just like I did. And I want the people to see that you can do that. America is so fantastic. Chase, look, in America, number one, we have free speech.
Yeah.
Free association, assemble, press, like this thing we're doing here. I could never criticize the king of Iran openly like this back there. I'm going to prison and be tortured. Number two, you have a right to appeal. You have a right to a trial. In America, you have a right to due process. Even the IRS, before they take your money, they have to give you the opportunity to have a trial. As a filer, you give that right up by putting the rope around your neck and filing that 1040 form under oath under penalty of perjury. As a non-filer, like 80 million Americans who no longer file a 1040 form, you don't give that right up. The IRS must make a case against you and give you a chance at the trial. And they have only 31 U.S. tax court judges. So if you understand these basic things, it's huge. There's way too many of us and very few of them. And if we, the American people, ever figure that out, there goes the deep state. There goes the criminals. We are overdue, Chase, for a peaceful tax revolt like the founding fathers did.
Civil disobedience.
At the time of the revolution. Not with force, peacefully, and not for taxes we owe, but taxes, Chase, that we legally never owed in the first place. And the proof of that is on our website for free for everybody to see for themselves at freedomlawschool.org.
So there's this clip that came across the desk today. This is clip number 19 for the crew. I want to play this and get your feedback. It's only a minute and a half long, but we've heard reports over the last couple of years, and even in the last couple of weeks, of the IRS ramping up some of its tactics. So there were rumors at one point in time that there were going to be 80,000 additional IRS agents hired at one point. Yesterday, we saw Joe Biden propose a capital gains tax of 44%. And we're seeing reports now that the IRS is using AI to target the middle class. So I want to run clip number 19, and let's just unpack it together on the other side. Check this out.
What we have learned is that the IRS, in fact, has been using AI to access bank accounts of American citizens without any kind of a search warrant or even without any specific claim that they have committed a crime. So this was something that was discovered by an undercover journalist. And what they found is that the IRS has claimed that they have access to every single person's bank account. This person also indicated that they've been working with the Department of Justice and that they have absolutely no problem whatsoever going after the little guy to make sure that they are paying their taxes. This is such a blatant violation of the Fourth Amendment that we have, Jim Jordan and I, sent a letter to the IRS demanding that they provide additional information about what they are doing with AI and what they are doing to protect the civil rights of American citizens.
So, Congresswoman, what's the end game here? Because at the end of the day, you can't put the AI genie back in the bottle, and it's so easy to use these technologies in the way that you're suspecting the IRS is. How do you protect American citizens and our constitutional rights?
Well, one of the things is we need a new administration in November, because this administration has been absolutely lawless in terms of its surveillance of us, of members of Congress, of local officials, of people who are protesters, of voters. This administration has completely ignored the Bill of Rights, whether it's the First Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment. They have weaponized the government
against us. Now, of course, this all comes in the context of our leaders reauthorizing, renewing, and extending the ability for FISA to surveil American citizens without a warrant. Watching that in that 90-second clip, I know it was a curveball. What are your thoughts? What's your impulsive reaction to that?
Well, of course, IRS is a criminal agency, just like CIA, FBI, and DOJ. And of course, they can, in rare cases, do that. But you got to remember this. There's 150 million Americans that file. 80 million people don't no longer file 1040 income tax, confession, trap forms. There's tens of millions of corporation tax returns filed, and it's only about 80,000 IRS employees. And vast numbers of them are simply clerks typing information on a computer
right,
or taking your calls. IRS is not this monster, that you should be afraid of, that the corrupt major media portrays them to be. They are literally the Wizard of Oz created by the corrupt major media. Again, ask yourself, IRS has come after me multiple times, and I've beaten them in their own courts and their own lawyers, because I've been telling Americans for over 30 years, do not feed the beast. You legally do not have no obligation to pay any federal income or payroll taxes. So they want to stop me, but they never indict me to take me for a jury like they've done to Trump, because they know I'll beat them. They know that when I beat them, it'd be a bigger victory for me and American people, so they'd rather leave me alone and hope that you and others don't give us publicity so American people do not hear our message.
They don't want to establish that precedence.
Yeah.
So. What about Americans who are employees and they work for corporations that do pay payroll tax and do automatically withhold? What are they supposed to do about the money that the IRS has already stolen from them before they've even filed?
They should go to our website, freedomlawschool.org, and the instructions are there on how to legally and safely stop the stealing of income taxes from their paycheck up front. So now they don't have to, by April 15th, file a 1040 income tax confession trap form like a slave and beg the IRS to please give me some of that money back. You stop the withholding right there. And for all business owners, independent contractors, stop sending IRS those quarterly estimated payments. Stop giving any forms to the IRS. If you're a business owner, stop withholding from paying your people. Do not 1099 anybody. That's all legally does not apply to people of the 50 states.
Well, let me ask you a tough question. Have you ever had a student who followed your teachings and methods that's been locked up?
Nobody.
Wow.
I've done this for over 22 years helping people. All their anything comes up, criminal, you're civilly with the IRS. Not one person that came to me clean, stopped filing income tax with me, not others, and stayed with me, has ever gone to prison, nor had the IRS levied their bank account, paycheck, their home, or any of their assets.
So I'm somebody who's absolutely 100% willing to fight the IRS and take all the risks, but I'm not comfortable or willing to fight with my wife. So how do I convince my wife that I'm not a maniac putting our family at risk if I want to go this route of just stopping payments to the IRS?
Well, Chase, let me ask you.
Yeah.
How would you convince your wife that you don't want to take the jab, corner jab?
Yeah.
Because the media tells you to be safe, make sure you get the corona jab and all the boosters. How would you educate her not to get the jab? You'd have to educate her.
Yeah.
And the education is on our website for free at freedomlawschool.org. I have 7 steps on our website to help everybody free themselves of IRS deception, fear, robbery, and slavery. And step one for your wife, Chase, and everybody, is to know that based on U.S. government's official legal websites, no law requires the people of the 50 states to file and pay income taxes. The only people that got to pay income tax are federal employees, people who travel to D.C., and citizens and residents of the District of Columbia. So it starts right there. People go to freedomlawschool.org for themselves. And listen, don't believe me. Nobody don't believe anything I say. Go to freedomlawschool.org. And everything I say is documented from U.S. government's official legal websites and reports.
Thank you so much. With us, we have Payman Motahedey. Promotes a better understanding of tax law through his numerous educational campaigns and seminars, empowering thousands to better understand tax law by relying exclusively on the official legal websites and reports of the United States government, and writing their congressmen to force the IRS and DOJ to strictly and faithfully follow federal laws as written. You can check out his work and his resources at freedomlawschool.org. That's freedomlawschool.org. Now, there's 2 things I want to get to in the next 9 minutes that we have together, Payman. I want to talk first about how employees and regular citizens, average citizens here in the United States can legally stop the withholding. I was under apparently the false impression that it was impossible to stop the withholding. So I'm fascinated to hear from you about that. And then if we have time, I also want to talk about best practices for small business owners as well. So I want to go individual to business. So how is it that one can legally stop the withholding of taxes? So here at InfoWars, a portion of my income, my salary is withheld every pay period, every 2 weeks. How can I force them to give me my money?
Well, what you can do is to fill out the W-4 form, and there's instructions on there on how you can put exempt to stop withholding from your paycheck. Now, I don't recommend people just do that because that's not enough to show your innocence, because you should not have to fill out the form at all.
Right.
IRS and accountants have duped and pressured employers to be your slave master and steal your money up front to force you to file a 1040 and get a little bit of that money back. So what I do is we have on our form on our website at freedomlawschool.org, the language of the law there that we quote the law and attach to the W-4. The look, employer, you got a gun to my head that you're going to take it from my paycheck more if I don't fill out the form, or you might fire me. So in order to get paid, I'm going to fill out this form that you're forcing me to do, but I'm explaining my objections in the law. So if the Department of Injustice crooks, everyone use that form, take it to a jury that you don't want to pay your fair share of taxes, you have the shark repellent in there. The law is part of your W-4 exempt form that you give to the IRS that the crooked government lawyer never wants the jury to see that they were also robbed, they were also stolen from. So it will leave you alone. Again, at freedomlawschool.org, it's there. People can call us. We'd be happy to answer questions and guide them to all these resources on our website for free.
So one of the things that was most frustrating to me as a small business owner starting my business in 2016, obviously, was taxes. And I was astounded when I met with my CPA for the first time that I was supposed to pay both sides of the Social Security tax. So as the employer, I paid the employer portion, even though I was a sole proprietor. And then as the employee on the income I paid myself, I paid the employee version as well. So how does this transition or translate over to small businesses, especially sole proprietors or maybe other small businesses with multiple employees, where the Social Security component of tax law comes into play, not just income tax, but Social Security as well?
Well, Social Security taxes apply only to certain activities taken in relationship with four U.S. island territories of Guam, Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, or American Samoa. So if you don't have nothing to do with those four island territories, it does not apply to you or your business. You simply stop filling out those forms. Stop taking from your employees' pay. Stop matching the taxes, payroll taxes you don't owe. Just stop it all together. No more jabs. Don't take any more jabs, no more withholding from your employees, and no more you sending money or papers to the IRS. You are free if you can free your mind, just like Morpheus told Neo in the Matrix, free your mind. And the way you get there is to educate yourself through our website, freedomlawschool.org, for free. It's all there for people spelled out to the T with videos and explicit instructions.
Now, you've been doing this for many years, so I imagine that you've had students, clients, different people that have heard you speak and really studied your work who have said, I wish I would have known all of this 20 years ago because I've been paying thousands upon thousands of dollars in taxes for 20 years. Is there any recourse whereby American citizens can actually go not only stop paying taxes legally, but go back and say, actually, all those taxes that I paid you, I didn't really owe you, give them back?
Unfortunately, that brings too much attention to yourself.
Yeah.
So that's why I do not recommend that. What I recommend everybody do for free is to write your three federal lawmakers, your two U.S. senators, and your House members. We have petitions on our website for free for you to send to all of them that spell out the law, quote them, and attach them with the relevant part highlighted. And say, here, Mr. Lawmaker, you are the owner of the IRS. There are some out-of-control IRS agents out there, management, and Department of Injustice lawyer, even some crooked judges who are out of control. You need to restrain and stop them from misapplying income tax on the people of the 50 states that legally do not owe it. Now, if I'm wrong, show me. I believe everybody should pay their fair share of taxes as provided by law. If you can show me I'm wrong, I will humbly and gladly pay my fair share of taxes. And we have done this. Our students and people on their own going to our website, freedomlawschool.org, for thousands and thousands of times. You know how many times any congressman can show us that we were wrong, that we have to file income tax?
Zero.
Exactly. Wow. So why are we paying income taxes that even the lawmakers, after we ask them by certified mail to show me where I'm required to pay it, they don't show it to you? Because they got you afraid through deception. That if you don't get the corona jab, you might die of corona. If you don't follow that 1040 form and don't put the rope around your neck and give it to the IRS will put you in jail, empty your bank account. Whoa! Afraid with the corrupt major media. And the solution, Chase, is alternative truth-telling media like InfoWars, Alex Jones, and you. Tell American the truth. Seek the truth, and the truth shall set you free at freedomlawschool.org.
So we've got about a minute left, and I want to give you the opportunity to talk a little bit more about freedomlawschool.org. Obviously, you have a lot of free resources that are available to the public, or petitions, different paperwork that they can use or documents that they can use, as well as just educational materials. Tell me a little bit more about how people can get involved with you if they want to take the next step and be a little bit more serious about these conflicts and this issue with the IRS beyond just the free resources and materials that you provide.
Well, if anybody in your audience, I think you have a lot of people in your audience who are the kind of people that the founding fathers were.
Yeah.
That believe in freedom. Believe we're not slaves. We're the same cloth as George Washington and Patrick Henry. If you're that kind of a person, you need to do like they did. Join hands with each other. Divorce the corrupt federal government. Stop voluntarily giving your money to them that you do not owe. Join hands together. So what we have is a program to restore freedom where you get to keep 70% of what you would have paid to the D.C. swamp and 30% of it. Now we gather in the Restore Freedom Plan to fund freedom media, to fund freedom lawsuits, election integrity lawsuits, and fund election of good, honest statesmen that represent American people, like Congressman Ron Paul, Donald Trump, to get America back to freedom once again.
Well, it's been an honor and a pleasure to have you, Payman, and I hope you'll come back and join us again. Make sure you visit freedomlawschool.org, and we'll see you on the other side. All right, folks, what a jam-packed show we've had today. We've got World War III ramping up in Ukraine. We've got protests igniting all over the United States of America on college campuses. We've got our own government, three-fourths of which, Congress, voting to send billions upon billions of dollars everywhere except our own border. And we've got, I believe, 91 federal indictments, charges against Donald Trump, all seemingly for crimes that he didn't actually commit. Now we have Democrat Arizona AG indicting Trump chief of staff and others over 2020 election scandal. This is clip number one we're going to run in a moment. Democrat Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays handed down several indictments on Wednesday in relation to the alternate elector situation that took place during the contested 2020 presidential election. Let's run it and unpack it.
Hi, I'm Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays. Let me start by thanking everyone for your patience as we conducted a thorough and professional investigation over the past 13 months into the fake elector scheme in our state. I understand for some of you today didn't come fast enough, and I know I'll be criticized by others for conducting this investigation at all. But as I have stated before and will say here again today, I will not allow American democracy to be undermined. It's too important. The investigators and attorneys assigned to this case took the necessary time to thoroughly piece together the details of the events that began nearly 4 years ago. They followed the facts where they led, and I'm very proud of the work they've done to date. We're here because justice demands an answer to the efforts that the defendants and other unindicted co-conspirators allegedly took to undermine the will of Arizona's voters during the 2020 presidential election. Arizona's election was free and fair. The people of Arizona elected President Biden. Unwilling to accept this fact, the defendants charged by the state grand jury allegedly schemed to prevent the lawful transfer of the presidency. Whatever their reasoning was, the plot to violate the law must be answered for, and I was elected to uphold the law of this state. the scheme, had it succeeded, would have deprived Arizona's voters of their right to have their votes counted for their chosen president. It effectively would have made their right to vote meaningless.
Well, there you have it. Do you remember that famous slogan from 2020 from Donald Trump? It's not me thereafter, it's you. I'm just in the way. Similar statement could be made about Alex Jones. He's one of the first, most notable to be deplatformed on virtually every platform. And it wasn't him they were after, it was you. He was just the test case. And Donald Trump is the test case in the political sphere. Not only are they charging Donald Trump with 91 crimes that he didn't commit, and they're just really nitpicking about details from 20 years ago and alleged affairs and things of that nature. And not only are they imprisoning people for their participation in January 6th, the most recent example, the most recent notable example, the elderly woman who walked into the Capitol on January 6th and simply prayed and then apparently left, who is facing time. But now they are going after virtually everyone who was associated with Donald Trump at all in any capacity, except the leftists who sought to undermine the integrity of his administration, his term. And regardless of whether the election in 2020 was legitimate, of course it wasn't. But hypothetically speaking, regardless of whether or not that election was really legitimate, one undisputed fact is that neither Joe Biden or Donald Trump are actually doing the job of president of the United States. I mentioned this yesterday on War Room. So whoever is doing the job, whether it's the chief of staff or the deep state or the intelligence community or a committee, whoever is actually performing the duties and doing the job poorly of president of the United States was not even on the ballot, was not elected in 2020. And regardless of whether the Dominion machines had problems, I don't even know. I haven't even looked into the machines themselves. It is undeniable that this pandemic was exploited and used to totally undermine the 2020 election, where states were able to change their laws pertaining to how they collect ballots and do these elections, where everything that Trump had going for him over the course of the first 3 years of his term, outstanding economy, basically every front, every policy he was winning on. The only thing he was unable to win on was healthcare reform because McCain came in with a brain tumor and voted against it and shot it down. They were able to use this pandemic to just wipe away all of the progress. Now, having spoken to our guest earlier with Harrison, it seems like the pandemic itself was leaked intentionally, and that not only was it leaked intentionally for multiple reasons, namely to undermine Trump's presidency and re-election campaign, but it seems that Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden were literally invested in the creation, the manufacturing, the development of COVID-19 itself. And within the same month, I'm hearing, as I understand it, within the same month that funding was canceled for Predict 2 and these Biden-linked companies that were outsourcing gain-of-function research overseas because it was illegal here in the United States, in the same month, all of a sudden, we have this leak of this COVID-19 virus and then lies about its origin. And China is allowing international flights in and out of Wuhan, but no domestic flights in and out of Wuhan and spreading it intentionally. And then they're lying about the efficacy and safety of the vaccines to treat it, while our politicians are legally allowed to be invested in companies like Pfizer and Moderna, who made billions upon billions of dollars off of this pandemic, providing these vaccines allegedly free, but paid for by the U.S. taxpayer. I mean, we are in the midst of the most corrupt presidential administration I can think of in the history of the United States. And maybe there was some 19th century president of the United States who was abysmally corrupt, but there just isn't evidence today to show the details of that corruption. But we have every piece of evidence one could possibly imagine. Not just evidence that we would need to prove that he's corrupt, but evidence that we could even imagine between the laptop and the emails and just the documents and the statements and the obvious video footage of the lies. We have every piece of evidence one could possibly imagine even existing to prove the depths of depravity of this soulless president of the United States, who's not only soulless, but brainless now. I mean, he wasn't the brightest star in the sky before, but now he's just a puppet. A puppet, which even the DNC and the intelligence community seem to be embarrassed about and terrified of. So not only is the deep state and the intelligence community and the DNC conspiring to imprison or get Trump off of the ballots or imprison all of his voters and supporters, or censor them at least, not only are they conspiring against Trump, but now they're conspiring against Biden as well. So regardless of whether you as a listener are a Biden supporter, which I imagine you probably aren't, or whether you're a Trump supporter, your candidate is being conspired against by the deep state. And our Congress is voting 75% to send billions of dollars overseas, and they're voting to renew the warrantless surveillance of American citizens in clear violation of our Fourth Amendment rights. I mean, there is absolutely zero representation of any American that exists in any meaningful way at the federal level. I know there are some good people in Congress. There's probably some good senators. I like the Rand Pauls and the Thomas Massies and others. But I'm talking about meaningful representation. I mean, what is the point of having a few good representatives when they can never win on any issue of legislation? And the question is, at what point do we stand up and say no more? And how do we do it? Because we are the frogs in the boiling water. We're sitting in this water. It's not boiling, but the heat is on. And we can't tell that we are about ready to be boiled alive by this tyranny because the heat is increasing so gradually. And everybody always talks about the Second Amendment as being a necessary right, a necessary protection, so that in the event that we need to fight against tyranny, we can rise up and do so. Well, folks, the Second Amendment is meaningless if it's not exercised. And we have been falling into tyranny for decades and decades and decades now, but nobody has stood up against the system. And I'm not advocating for violence, folks, but we need to be thinking very seriously about what we can do to ensure that Donald Trump is elected and what we are going to do if they steal this election too. Folks, Drew Hernandez is taking over the fourth hour today. Stay tuned for more on the other side, and make sure you visit InfoWarsStore.com to be the reason that we are on the air while getting amazing products for your health, clarity, focus, and energy.
All right, InfoWarriors, you are now watching the fourth hour of The Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Drew Hernandez. I just want to get right into this because this story broke last night, and I definitely had a lot to say here on the Alex Jones Show. I want to welcome every single one of you guys tuning in. If you guys are watching on X, make sure to follow me on X, @DrewHLive. Reshare the broadcast immediately, band.video, wherever you may be watching. Copy the links. Please share these absolutely everywhere. We thank you all for your participation in the InfoWar. But this interesting development in Arizona is very interesting. InfoWars.com, Democrat Arizona AG indicts Trump chief of staff and others over 2020 election scandal with the electors and obviously those in Trump's orbit and attorneys, including Rudy Giuliani, Mark Meadows, Christina Bob, et cetera, and many others. And what I find interesting about this is the timing. And the timing of this is telling me everything I need to know about what is really going on. I know. I mean, you take a look, no matter where Trump goes, it's absolute cheers and love and acceptance and chanting for Trump to come back and to fix and make America great again. Honestly, now people are starting to understand what he meant by that. All of the normies and these retards out there that said that was racist and that was a bigoted thing to say and it was xenophobic to want to make America great again or shut down American borders. Well, now that tune is changing because a lot of people are experiencing the devastation of replacement migration, illegal immigration. People are experiencing the devastation of inflation and what the Great Reset actually looks like. And that is why that is the top two issues going into the 2024 election. And if we do get a free and fair election, which I still have concerns about whether this thing is going to be legitimate or not, but if we do, Trump is going to destroy Joe Biden. And you are seeing this everywhere Trump goes. Okay, obviously, when Trump is around MAGA or he's around Patriot adjacent individuals that may be a little closer leaning to where we are, you always see it's a warm welcome. He's received by MAGA all the time. Obviously, people have criticism against Trump, just like I do, just like Alex Jones does. I mean, if there was nothing to criticize about Donald J. Trump, then that would be very very interesting time to be alive. There's really no such thing as a perfect person aside from the Lord Jesus Christ himself. So just newsflash, you're never going to get a perfect person running for president. But what I will say is it's not just when Trump is around MAGA circles or his rallies or at Mar-a-Lago or some kind of dinner or a campaign stop. It's when Trump is even going into these leftist deep blue strongholds, like the heart of Harlem, the bodega, when Trump is traveling around the United States of America and he's showing up to convenience stores. He's just showing up to be around the people. You take a look at this morning in New York, just the absolute reception and love and support that Trump is receiving, which is what the deep state hates. And it's what the mainstream media and all the propagandists do not want people seeing. But it's continuing. Even this viral clip that we saw come out this morning of a Newsmax reporter interviewing a construction worker or a union worker and asks, what is your message to Joe Biden? And all it is a bold, straight up New York F you to the face, right? I mean, that this is why I keep telling people, everybody hates Joe Biden. Everybody hates Joe Biden. Everybody hates Kamala Harris because people are starting to realize just exactly what these people are doing to your own personal life. Because a lot of normies, they like to sit back and watch from home and, yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy too, but I don't really want to get involved because it's not really affecting my life. It's not really affecting my bank account. It's not affecting my family. It's not affecting my reality or my existence. Well, that's not allowed anymore. You're not allowed to think that way. I mean, obviously, you shouldn't be thinking that way because geopolitical developments and globalism and American deep state operatives and their agendas absolutely affect every single one of us. And I'm going to unpack all of that when we come back from the break, guys. So don't go anywhere. If you're watching on X, share this absolutely everywhere. Tag me in it, too, at Drew H. Live. I'll reshare it. We'll be right back on the other side. Don't go anywhere. All righty, guys. We are back. Just sharing this on X, getting the broadcast out, guys. Make sure to share it, share it, share it. We thank you at Drew H. Live, at Real Alex Jones, at InfoWars. We appreciate every single one of you guys. But as I was saying, guys, really kind of zeroing in on this because I find this development in Arizona very interesting because the authenticity of the reaction to the Biden regime or the O-Biden regime and the diversity hire in chief, this retard Kamala Harris that they propped up and the puppet president, right? People are starting to realize, and this has been going on for 4 years now, that these people are destructive and you're not allowed to sit on the sidelines because they won't let you sit on the sidelines. I think a lot of people think, and I'm not talking about the info warriors, I'm talking about, you know, normies, people that are just, you know, scanning or perusing and scrolling through the aggregated AI driven news feed from the state approved big tech propagandists, right? These illusionists that try to control the minds of millions of people, which actually they effectively do. But I think that type of individual has maybe had this mindset where, you know, I am not affected by this. I think Trump, you know, is an entertaining character. He's a reality TV star. Wow, he's a racist. Oh, wow, that's crazy. I don't want to be identified as a racist to say I support Trump. I mean, I've always liked Trump, but I guess he's a racist now. And the right thing to do is to go with Democrats and Joe Biden because, well, orange man bad. And
old pedo man good, right? You know, it's literally that's how simple. Okay, those are simpletons. All right, that is how people are thinking right now in the 21st century, in 2024, in the United States of America and globally. It's like this 10-second or less information intel download on social media tolerance, right? Like people that are like, come on, dude, make the video less than 10 seconds. Really? 30 seconds long? You're pushing it, man. Like, all right, you're definitely a low IQ. You can't sit there and tolerate information for more than a minute. Something's seriously wrong with you. Do you even think? Like, do you honestly even think at all? Do you think? Do you even have the time to sit down and think about anything? You just get all irritated whenever you have to think about something for more than 10 seconds. That's wild, dude. I find that that's something, maybe it's demonic. I don't know what it is, but something injected that into the, you know, these past few generations to get people to think that way, where they get irritated if they have to sit down and think for more than like 30 seconds to 60 seconds. And it's like, you're somehow a bad person. Like if you guys know what I'm talking, like, especially if you're like a show host or a content creator, like people are vicious. They get pissed if you put out a piece of content that's like more than 60 seconds. I think there's something to that. I think that's some kind of demonic psyop on the human mind to get you to not think. Some kind of tool there. There's something there, definitely, guys. But with that said, people are waking up to the reality that this is affecting your life and you can't run away from it. You can't ignore it. You can try and blame Trump for it at this point, but it's not effective because even that is backfiring. Because these people have been in power for the past 4 years. And so even when they try to blame Trump, it's just not computing. It's not calculating correctly. It's not making sense. So there's a red pill right there as well. And people are waking up to this stuff, which is a good thing. But like I said, even breaching the matrix by the optics and the narrative breaching independent reporters or on the ground videos that you're seeing just go completely viral almost every single day now, where people are expressing their love, they're expressing their support for President Trump in leftist deep blue strongholds. You got to emphasize that point. But also, this is why these top two issues in the 2024 election are illegal immigration and the rise of inflation and the downfall of the American economy. Why? Because these things are affecting everybody and their own life, their own personal bank account, their own personal families. Americans having run-ins with illegals squatting, taking over their private property. Illegals invading elementary schools in South Texas and various other states. Like, there's no getting away from this. There's no running away from this. And what normies need to understand at home, if you may find yourself watching this right now or you're coming in hot off of X, is you can't get away from this. Like, there is no middle ground to start. And there is no just turning a blind eye. And it's not because Alex Jones or InfoWars is fanning the flames and instigating all of this conflict. They try to say that about Trump, right? Oh, it's Trump. He's the chaos candidate. Nikki Haley during the primaries, during 2023 and a little bit into this year. What was she constantly saying? She was regurgitating the same thing that we can't respond. We can't respond to Democrat chaos with Republican chaos. And that's what MAGA and Trump represent, like a total FU to all of us, right? Well, she's deep state, of course. She's a globalist. She's a shill. She's a political prostitute for the New World Order. That's what Nikki Haley literally is, dude. She's literally a disgusting, ugly, wrinkly, okay, political prostitute. So don't listen to Nikki Haley. She's retarded too. But anyways, you know, that's why that narrative is pushed. They try to shift and flip things and they project, they gaslight. And what they're doing, they place on everybody else, on all of their political opponents, quite literally, immediately, and almost daily at this point. They're even trying to do this in the mainstream media. I don't know if you guys have caught on this, but you're hearing like Rachel Maddow, you're hearing like Joy Reid, all these retards on MSNBC and CNN. They're trying to paint Trump like he's mentally incapable or no longer cognitively thinking any longer. Like, they're trying to paint Trump as if he's Joe Biden intellectually, which is interesting because they'll try to say that, but on the same show or literally in like the next segment, they'll talk about how dangerous Trump is to democracy. He's a threat to democracy because of the message that he's preaching and that he's spreading across the United States of America. It's like, okay, if Trump is no longer cognitive and can't even think straight, then how is he intellectually capable of concocting, you know, such extremist levels of propaganda that leads to extremist violence across the United States of America? It doesn't make sense. It's not supposed to make sense. These people are liars. They're grifters. They're hypocrites, and they're intentional about it. And they're like, F you, as they do it. They know they're lying. They're fully conscious that they're lying. They're not lying unconsciously. They are lying fully consciously, fully aware, intentional, because that's what propagandists do. That's what hypocrites do. That's what liars do. They know they have to do that because they have to result to that because they have nothing else. These people have nothing left to even try to legitimately run on. Nothing. They're not popular. They're not successful in terms of America viewing them as their policies actually turning into something successful for their own personal lives. And that's exactly what matters here. And I'm talking in the context, if we get a free and fair election, which I don't know if we are, guys. I honestly don't know if we're going to get a free and fair election. I'm just going to be totally honest with you guys. I don't know. You know what I mean? If the riggers rigged in 2020, what's going to stop the riggers from trying to rig in 2024? Obviously, we have the RNC. We got Laura Trump. We have a lot of grassroots boots on the ground, ballot chasers, poll watchers. There's a lot more eyes and an intent to monitor this time around, which they might flip that too. They might call that voter intimidation and suppression. They can take this any way they want, guys. I mean, at this point, the deep state does whatever they want. They don't care whether it's perceived authentically or not. They don't care whether it makes sense to the viewer or the listener or the individual witnessing or paying attention. They don't care. They just do. Okay? They do whatever they need to do in order to accomplish their tyrannical goals. So you're not dealing with people that have a code of ethics. You're not dealing with people that are worrying about, you know, is this going to be perceived correctly or not? I mean, they're void of morality. They don't give a damn as to whether what they're doing is right or not. What I'm saying is they don't even give a damn as to whether people think that it makes sense or not. They just do. Why? Because that's what tyrants do. That's what authoritarians do. It's not supposed to calculate correctly. It's not supposed to make sense. It's not to become equal to anything that's accurate. It's 2 + 2 = 538. That's what it is to these people. Because their calculation is 2 + 2 = you obey to whatever we say the answer is. Because we are your reality. We are your masters. We are your math. We are your calculation. We are your answer giver. We are your everything. We are your protector. We are your provider. We are your all-seeing eye in terms of surveillance to keep you safe, right? We are your financial advisors. We are your financial regulators. This is why this is going to go down the path of the mark of the beast. It's a godlike mentality. And what I mean by godlike is not like trying to be like in terms of Christian doctrine, godliness, trying to be more like God in your sanctification as you grow as a Christian, you get further and further away from the old man or the old woman you used to be before you were converted and born again. No, a godlike mentality, like when Lucifer was cast out of heaven, he wanted to be like God, be like the Almighty, ascend above the heavens in the throne of God. It's a blasphemous self-righteous, really. It's a blasphemous self-righteous satanic ascension within one's own mind, creating a reality around themselves that's void of God, that makes themselves God. And that's what you're dealing with. You're dealing with people like this, these Luciferians, these globalists, These communists, these authoritarians, these violators of the Constitution of the United States, those that don't believe in free will, they say that we believe in democracy and everybody's voice matters and diversity of skin color and opinion and voices. That's our strength. Not if you're white, though. Not if you're white. If you're white, you don't count. No, not if you're white. We're not allowed to have whitey in our big portrait of diversity hires. Right? Like, it's just these people, they don't want diversity. They don't want equality. They don't want different flavors added in for a plurality of voices and opinions and different angles and viewpoints, which I like. I like hearing different viewpoints. That's not what they want. No, their idea of diversity and equality, DEI and ESG, is a total, absolute, black supremacist, LGBTQ, imperial takeover of Western civilization and global civilization. That's what they're doing it with. And that's how they're accomplishing it. But all that to say is, like, when you're dealing with this mindset, it's demonic, it's satanic, but with that comes alongside to have the desire to want to be God and ascend above God. And so with that, God is sovereign, he's all-knowing, he's omnipotent, he's all-powerful. God is perfect. God knows all things. He sees all things. He hears all things. He's fully aware of all things. God is the righteous, eternal judge, Jesus Christ himself, the perfect decision maker according to law in our everyday life, which is God's law for humanity and the universe. God is the all in all, the Alpha and the Omega. So these people, with their Antichrist mindset, they put themselves in that same position, in that same way of thinking. And so now you take a look at the world around you. That's why with the advancements of artificial intelligence, with Big Brother having the ability, look at FISA, right? With the whole violation, in my opinion, of the Fourth Amendment to have intelligence agencies be required to obtain a warrant before they surveil Americans. They just can do whatever they want at this point. And they say, oh, it's because of fentanyl and we want to be able to monitor Islamic terrorists. Yeah, give me a break. You guys are facilitating the importation of fentanyl and Islamic terrorists on a daily basis. That's a bunch of BS. That's not why they don't want amendments to FISA, so they are required to obtain an amendment. No, they don't want it because they need to be able to surveil the people. They need to be able to surveil Americans as they have been for decades, because that is the all-seeing eye according to the deep state. That is the all-seeing eye according to the New World Order. It's artificial intelligence mixed with mass worldwide surveillance technology, whether it be audio, whether it be video, whether it be drone, or whether it be via satellite technology. And I'm not against satellites. I'm not against drones. I'm not against AI, because any one of those things could be used for good. Artificial intelligence could be used for good. And I truly believe that. And I've seen it. There's a lot of Christian ministries and pastors that are having their full sermons translated in hundreds of different languages in real time, in their own voice, preaching the gospel in different languages in the middle of church services because of artificial intelligence. Like, that's a good thing. That's a good use of advanced technology. And like I said, I'm not against technology. I'm not against the advancements of technology. I am against that those pieces of advanced technology end up getting weaponized by militaries, or end up getting weaponized by intelligence agencies and turned on civilization and their own people. And so what I'm saying right now is that if you take a look at the world around you, and I'm kind of talking to a normie right now, like if you're listening, if you really pay attention to the world around you with this push for worldwide surveillance, this push for to be rid of private ownership of property as a business owner or just a citizen. You'll own nothing and be happy. They want a complete welfare state. This is why they're pushing communism so hard. This is why they want everybody dependent on the state, and they want everybody in one centralized location, one centralized grid, where everyone will be equal. The state will pay you once a month. It'll be great. And everyone will have the equality that we've ever, ever, and have always wanted. But they fail to tell you that that equality ends up being, you're all going to equally be peasants, eating bugs off of the floor and crawling around, finding a way to try to survive for you and your family. You know, that's the equality you're going to get. You're all going to be equally peasants while all of the elites remain fat and happy and just totally laughing at all of the retards that bought all of their ideas that led to give them and hand them over full totalitarian control. That's just human history in a nutshell, dude. That's like nothing new. This has happened many times before, and we are experiencing it and watching it happen and be pushed in real time. But because they have this antichrist godlike mentality, well, they want to be your provider. They want to be your protector via technological advancements of surveillance. Like I said, mentioned the hot pieces of technology of today, AI, drones, satellites, etc. Monitoring through homes, monitoring what, through your phones, your smartphones, that they could listen in on anything. Bro, if Facebook or Google, okay, has the technology through your microphone on your phone to listen in to your conversations, and you say certain keywords, and then all of a sudden you're scrolling through Facebook or you're browsing through your browser, and all of the ads that you see end up being what you and your mom were just talking about 3 minutes ago. Right, this is nothing new, but I mean, if that is obviously real, right? Well, then God only knows what the hell the NSA is doing. I'll tell you who does know is Edward Snowden. I'll tell you that, but God only knows. He tried to tell us, but God only knows what they really got and what they're really doing and how they're really surveilling the American people and global society with the technologies that they have that are unreleased, which do exist. And this should cause a concern for anybody. Because like I said, it's not that – I think people get this twisted for normies. I think people actually tell themselves that, well, there's two things. I think they tell themselves, well, if I don't have to look at it, if I'm not seeing it, well, then I don't have to deal with it. It never happened. So if I'm not aware, then I don't have to worry about it. It's not something in my reality. There's people that think that way, which is retarded. And then you have other people that will tell themselves, well, I'm not opposed to it. Like, whatever, right? Like, if I go along with it, like the mass surveillance and censorship and violation of my amendment rights as an American, if I just kind of, you know, don't speak out, if I don't take issue with open borders, you know, if I kind of go along with Bidenomics, all is well. If I don't, whatever, you know, it's just those crazy Trump supporters that are getting investigated by the feds. Because look at them, they're so rowdy and they're just loud, right? I think there's another person that sits there and tells themselves, well, if I don't speak out against these people, well, I'll be fine. They're not going to come after me. Wrong. Way wrong. And it's not because you don't want the smoke. Right? Like, I don't want the smoke, so then I'm not going to have to deal with the smoke. They're not going to come after me. I'm not going to be in the crosshairs. I won't be in the scope. That's not going to happen. If I don't see it, A, I don't got to deal with it. It's not happening. Or B, if I don't speak out against these people and I just go along with it, I won't get the smoke. I'll be fine. I'll just coast, right? I'll just coast. I'll just adapt. I'll just coast. And, you know, I'll survive that way. Kind of not say anything. Well, that's way wrong, because it's not a matter of you speaking out. That's not the heart of a tyrant. The heart of the tyrant wants to rule you regardless how you feel. The heart of a tyrant wants to dominate you regardless whether you agree with it or not. The heart of the tyrant is going to come after you whether you oppose them or whether you don't. The heart of a tyrant does not care or even stop to think about what the hell you think about them and their actions towards you. The only thing that's on their heart is full control, domination, and the ambition to rule over the free world and violate the free rights of human beings. That is a globalist. That is a tyrant. That is a Satanist. I'll break this more down when we come back from the other side. At Drew H. Live, at InfoWars, on X, share the broadcast. Alrighty, InfoWarriors, we are back. You are now watching the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Drew Hernandez. Want to invite you guys to check out my nightly, daily show on Rumble. Go to rumble.com/Drew Hernandez. I host Drew Hernandez Live Monday through Friday at 8 p.m. Pacific. That's 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Go to rumble.com/Drew Hernandez. Follow me over there, or just in the search bar, type Drew Hernandez. I'm the only Drew Hernandez with the green verified badge on Rumble. And follow me on X at Drew H Live. Appreciate all of you guys. And as always, go to InfoWarsStore.com. Make sure to make a purchase today. All of the great products that contribute to your ability to continue to endure and fight this InfoWar every single day, while at the same time funding the InfoWar and InfoWars.com on a daily basis to keep us going on into the future, combating the New World Order on a daily basis. Again, that's InfoWarsStore.com. Go make a purchase today to keep InfoWars alive. All right, guys, I really want to continue to break this down, going back to the situation in Arizona. Now, I find the timing of this very strategic and calculated. I think those are the two words that came to mind when I saw this news break last night of Democrat Arizona AG indicting Trump chief of staff and others, electors, and Trump attorneys over the 2020 election in Arizona, literally accusing Trump of being a co-conspirator. So Trump hasn't been officially indicted yet in Arizona, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's coming in the next couple months, most likely probably by the summer. But I'm not surprised. And I find there's been a lot of great takes on X, people responding that elector mistakes or miscalculations have been made in past U.S. elections. I think it was a Nixon election and Kennedy, where they solidified in Hawaii one candidate that won. They sent it in. It ended up being wrong, so they had to change it. Were they indicted? Were they imprisoned? Absolutely not. Obviously, there's double standards everywhere you look when it comes to what's going on in American politics, culture, etc. But with that said, I find the timing of this very calculated because of how I opened up this fourth hour with explaining to you guys that the absolute rejection of the Biden regime is so abundantly, overtly clear right now. And for two reasons, because I don't know if you're from Arizona, but I can tell you right now that in the state of Arizona, they are pushing hard. This is why the Biden campaign is spending millions, possibly hundreds of millions of dollars on campaign ads. This ends up on Google. This ends up on television. It's every, you cannot get away from this. They did this in 2022 on this issue of abortion and reproductive rights. Well, they know that Arizona is not in a good place when it comes to support for Joe Biden. Arizona has been experiencing these, it's so insane to see the gas prices in Arizona reaching nearly $5 a gallon, my guy. in Arizona, which is insane. The rise of the cost of living, the rise of essentials, groceries, the rise of the cost of everything because inflation, even business owners in the state of Arizona that are experiencing, especially when it comes to real estate, huge real estate business going on in Arizona and a lot of supply chain issues. Trust me, I got family that are a lot of real estate agents and brokers that I mean, they've always been like financially conservative, but now they're like, damn, this administration is causing some serious supply chain issues and it is damaging our ability to survive and make money and have a successful business. And particularly Arizona, a lot of this is coming all together and it's not looking good for the Biden administration. So they need something. At first, we saw that they're trying to make this issue of reproductive rights, which is infanticide and slaughtering and murdering of babies, right? But they call it abortion and healthcare. They're trying to fan those flames again in Arizona. They're pouring millions of dollars into campaign ads. And if you're from Arizona, you're already seeing it. It's obnoxious at this point. They are really trying to emotionally and psychologically manipulate millions of female Arizonans. And you could see it as they're really trying to push that and make it a huge issue according to their side of things, it's not that big of an issue as it was when Roe v. Wade was overturned. That's why when you see these campaign ads in Arizona from the Biden campaign, it's all about how Trump appointed Supreme Court justices that he knew was going to overturn Roe v. Wade. They're trying to fan the flames of it again. And when I say it's not that big of a deal, according to their viewpoint of it being a huge campaign issue, it's not working out for them. So they need to fan the flames. They need propaganda, and they're doing it. They're already rolling it out. But then there's this. Now there's another one. They played their card last night for Arizona. So Arizona has to really – really pay attention. Like I'm no political campaign expert. I'm no Roger Stone. All I could do is like analyze things and take a look at the direction that these people are going in. And I really hope that the Trump campaign and the HQs and the activists in Arizona are really getting ahead of this because they really launched something last night that they are going to run with to the very end. Okay, they in Arizona particularly because of the audit. It was a huge point of controversy, and all of the leftists and the Uniparty were attacking everyone MAGA that supported just looking into the election results, auditing the election results to see if it was legitimate or not. Well, even that was being called an attack on democracy and a distrust to our democratic system. You should just trust us. You should just trust the process. Yeah, no, I don't think so. But that's why they've been pushing this narrative, because this is doing a few things, especially in Arizona, because now they can run with the propaganda together. I find it so interesting how good these people are. Not like they're good people, but like they're really talented and effective. These people are masters at propaganda and narrative creation and manipulation, because now they have the manipulation. They're going after the female vote in Arizona. And now they're going to go after the independents in Arizona and those that believe that questioning an election in Arizona is somehow an attack on democracy, and that's MAGA extremism. And so now they're going to run these two narratives simultaneously for the next few months on top of Trump is a criminal. He co-conspired to rig your election. He co-conspired to thwart your election results as an Arizonan. He attempted to erase your own voice. He co-conspired with his attorneys. He co-conspired with his electors. He co-conspired with everyone in his orbit during 2020. This is what you are going to hear for the next few months leading up into November, particularly in the state of Arizona on steroids. And if the Trump campaign and any of the activists in Arizona are not getting ahead of this immediately, well, this is going to be effective. I can guarantee you it will be effective. Arizona hates Joe Biden. There are people in Arizona that are seeing Joe Biden, but this also causes another factor. If they don't rig it, They're going to really try to manipulate people into believing this stuff. And unfortunately, a lot of normies, we can't underestimate these people. We cannot underestimate these people and just say, oh, just let it go. It may backfire, but it's also going to cause something else to go on. There's going to be a new phenomenon that comes out of this in Arizona. And I think what we're going to see is we are going to see a lot of people end up listening to this propaganda and getting distracted. That's what this is going to do. These two narratives running simultaneously is going to cause a huge distraction with the absolute devastation that this Biden administration has been causing, from inflation to illegal immigration. I'll tell you what I mean when we come right back. Don't go anywhere. I predict as we get closer and closer to Election Day that psychological operations, propaganda campaigns, possible false flags, or like we're seeing on the universities, the activation of Antifa, the activation of pro-Hamas individuals, the activation of the illegals pouring out onto the streets, riots. I think just destabilization is on the horizon, because there has to be, like I said, as we ended the last segment, there has to be some massive distractions going on, some huge distractions. And the big distraction that they had and the big psyop that they had in 2020 was the bioweapon, lockdowns. And that gave them the excuse to really manipulate the mass mail-in ballot operation, because people were so distracted. I'm talking about normies out there. People were so distracted. Oh, COVID, we're all going to die. Put on 5 masks. We can't go vote in person because we're going to die if we do so. We have to keep democracy afloat by voting by mail. That's what we need to do. It's the only way. And speaking of Arizona, when I confronted Barack Obama during the 2022 midterms, when he was campaigning for Katie Hobbs, some of you saw that footage. It's super viral footage. It was all over CNN, Fox News, whatever. But I remember, because I sat there and I listened to all of their cringe leftist speakers, and it was the weirdest thing. Like, they were pushing mail-in ballot voting as if it was like the next level or the future, like a new iPhone. I'm not even exaggerating. I wish I recorded that part, because they were talking about how mail-in ballot voting is like the next level of convenience, like it's some kind of technological advancement. It's the new thing to do. And it was super cringe. It was like a lot of these woke white Democrats, females, they were all coming up on stage and they were saying, Everyone's gonna vote by mail, right? Yeah. Mail-in ballot voting is cool now, right? Yeah. You know what? It was the weirdest cultish thing. And I always found that interesting, because that was part of the op, even in 2022 and beyond. And so they do need some distractions. They do need some distractions going into this election. I think that's why you're seeing kind of a preview of a possible Summer of Love 2.0. We're not there quite yet. We're almost there. I covered those riots in 2020. We're not there quite yet, but we're getting there. With all of this, all these skirmishes going on in universities, you got Benjamin Netanyahu literally calling for this, like geopolitically calling for college universities to crack down on anti-Semitism. Don't let it spread, because anti-Semitism was in the universities in the 1930s, and that led to the rise of Adolf Hitler and the Holocaust, and you need to do something about it. And of course, America ends up obeying. Yes, Lord Benjamin Netanyahu. Yes, we will censor everybody. We will arrest peaceful protesters. We will censor anybody that we declare or you declare is an anti-Semite. You know, who gets to define that? You had Greg Abbott yesterday during the demonstrations at the university, particularly UT, literally come out and say these protesters should be jailed or should be arrested. Like, what? Anti-Semitism will not be tolerated in Texas, period. Isn't it interesting that Greg Abbott didn't say won't be tolerated on Texas universities or colleges? He said Texas, period. What you're seeing on the universities is a preliminary rollout of what's to come. Who gets to define what is anti-Semitic? They get to define that at any moment? I mean, you could literally just be a normie, right? You could be a normie in Texas, right? You could be a normie in Texas. And obviously some of those protesters were getting out of line. There were some laws broken, but some of them were protesting. And the factor was, no, Greg Abbott didn't say they're violating the law. No, he blamed anti-Semitism in the context of why people are being arrested. What I find interesting, and this is something to think about, is, yeah, who gets to define that? But what if you're some normie in Texas and you're like, you know, I don't really have an opinion on Israel. I don't really have an opinion on Palestine. I don't really care for any of that. All I know is that I'm struggling financially as an American and I can barely pay my bills. I'm living paycheck to paycheck. I can barely put food on the table. I can barely provide for my family, for my kids. I'm struggling to financially provide for them through their school career, K through 12. I'm definitely struggling to save for them to, I don't even know if I want them to go to a college, but you know, normies are like, I got to save for them to go to college. I'm just struggling all over. I don't have enough money to even take my wife out on a date. I am just surviving, dude. I'm barely surviving. I'm going into debt. I can barely pay rent. I'm getting screwed here. If you're just a normie, I'm talking a normie like that, and you're in Texas, and you're like, so I kind of don't want to give my money to Israel right now. I don't want to give my money to Israel and or to Ukraine, or I don't want to give my money to Iran or Gaza. I don't want my taxpayer money to go to that because I could kind of use that for my survival. Oh, well, so you're an anti-Semite for saying that. That means that you hate Jews. That means that you want another Holocaust. That means that you want the destruction of the Jewish state. That means that you want to see Jewish people gassed and murdered. Like, wait, dude. I just told you I don't have an opinion on this. I'm just trying to survive, man. I just need a little bit more cash to survive, and I'd rather my money not go to Israel or anything. Well, that's anti-Semitic, bro. You can't say things like that in Texas. You should be jailed, according to Greg Abbott. Say, Drew, that sounds extreme. Is that really what they would define anti-Semitic? Oh yes. Oh yes. Absolutely. And I take issue with that. Why? Because it's anti-American. It's anti-First Amendment. I'm all for people peacefully protesting and assembling to express their grievances, the federal government, local government, etc., done in a respectful manner in collaboration with the authorities at hand, not asking them permission, but to coordinate so it's peaceful and it's strategically in order so people don't get hurt, right? I'm all for that. Especially on universities, you get with the leadership of the university. You hear the do's and the don'ts. This is what we're going to do. You know, don't invade a classroom and barricade yourself in, which these people are doing, not at UT, but ever other universities. I'm all for the peaceful protest. I may not agree with a lot of people. That's fine. I could roast you. I might think you're retarded for what you believe because I have free speech to say that. But I believe in your right to say it. That's the First Amendment. We shouldn't be censoring anybody. We should not be censoring anybody. And they're calling it hate speech. It's anti-Semitism is hate speech. It's crazy because Governor Greg Abbott is not doing this on big tech. I mean, this is the real world, bro. This is on universities and campuses in the state of Texas. The question is it constitutional? But you're not allowed to ask that question. Well, that's anti-Semitic too, because you're setting aside what Benjamin Netanyahu said and requested. Well, this is America. We have the First Amendment. And whatever hate speech even means, it's protected under the First Amendment. Is calling for the genocide and the murder of individuals and the slaughtering of people and calling for the death and calling to action to wipe people off of the face of the planet, I would say that's not First Amendment. I would say that's calling for the death and the murder and the destruction of a free human being that has the right to life. That's enshrined in our Constitution as well, because that's a God-given right. But if people are just protesting because they don't like what Israel is doing and they're voicing it, or like I said, you're just ignoring me. That's like, yeah, I don't really care. I just want my money for me. No thanks. Keep me out of it. Well, that, even that's anti-Semitic as well, isn't it? No, you must obey. You must bow. And it's no different from globalism or the leftists on Facebook and the fact checkers that get to define what hate speech is and regulate what you can or cannot say. But this is happening in real life, in real time, outside of a social media platform. The question is it constitutional? If the answer is no to that, then reject it. All right, guys, thank you guys for tuning in. The War Room is up next. Follow me on X @DrewHLive and rumble.com/DrewHernandez. See ya.